Me too.
Ladies and JJs, that sounds awful. Welcome to WTF and TFW. I'm Vangelis. I am your host this evening, and joining me today is Aaron.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to be part of this already.
No, it's going to be fine.
JJs? What? Where does that come from?
Toronto Blue Jays. It's a bird.
Okay. It's a mean bird.
Yep. And it's a sports team that a lot of people in one town really care about. Boom! They got, yeah, that was a burn.
You burned that one guy.
Yep. The remaining Blue Jays fan now hates this podcast. I don't know anything about baseball. Also joining us today is Omegas Prime.
I'll defend the Blue Jays if only because their existence legitimizes the whole World Series part of baseball.
Yeah, they're the Canadian team.
Now you have the Expos.
You have the Expos, but really...
Who were the Expos?
Did they win? No. No, the Blue Jays have actually won the World Series, so it's legitimized.
Well, yeah, once. And that became like what Toronto was that whole year, if I remember right. I was little then, but I have back in Victoria a Blue Jays signed baseball because I was in Toronto as a little kid and there's just Blue Jays everywhere. And I was like, I want that baseball because Blue Jays! And I didn't know anyone who was on that baseball. Who are the Expos?
A baseball team in Montreal.
They used to be. They're gone now.
They're gone now. Excellent. Anyway, we are your source for Canadian baseball news here at TFW 2005. We're also pretty peppy. I've got Coca-Cola Zero, and Aaron's got some little thing over there.
Yep.
What was it called?
I made myself a Black Blood of the Earth Kona Blend Latte.
Kona, that's right. You had to bust out the Kona because you weren't feeling all there.
Yep.
Like a proper junkie. It's like, I can't
fix
perform.
Fix things with more caffeine.
I can't perform. Get me the Kona. I don't got enough milk. Just cut more Kona in there. It'll be fine.
Yeah. It's about double the strength I normally like. But hey, sometimes you need to do it.
Yeah. So around about the 30-minute, 40-minute mark, you're just going to start cussing up a storm. And
yeah,
it's going to be a good time. We're here, ladies and gentlemen, to talk to you today about Transformers. And we're going to come back to a somewhat beloved subject, because the artist actually replied in the podcast thread the last time we talked about one of his blog posts, and that was super cool. Emiliano Santalucia from the Santa Lux blog, who did the Aligned Continuity Sideswipe design and Thundertron, has posted a new post, that's redundant, of the Aligned Continuity Jazz. I've mostly just been looking at the pics. I haven't read all the info yet, but... it's a similar aesthetic to the Aligned Continuity Sideswipe. This one is a lot less overtly movie-like. You have to start looking at some of the finer details to really see the moviness, because, you know, Movie Sideswipe had a very unique silhouette, as opposed to Movie Jazz, who was kind of more basic bipedal. And, you know, at first glance, as far as I can tell, this is, again, like, it's some of the most key details of G1 Jazz. The chest actually reminds me a lot of Animated. And then when you start heading down to the legs and stuff, there's a little bit more of a movie-style detailing there, although I haven't lined up all the different artworks to see exactly where inspirations may have come from. Also, I really kind of dig how the rear headlights are on the forearm parts, like the rear curvy bit of the car has formed the part where the arms come from. That's a technical term, by the way.
Curvy bit, yeah.
Yeah, the curvy bit. Mm-hmm. So this thing looks really cool. He's got, you know, big shoulder launcher. He's got a slightly more movie-style, visor, only because it's a bit pointier.
I don't know. It almost looks... The whole face almost looks animated, in my mind.
Well, Animated didn't have ears. Remember, Animated Jazz had a smooth head. I just looked at him yesterday.
I guess I was just looking at the relationship of the visor to face.
I could see that.
The key there is the lack of the nose, because that's common on the Prime figures.
Hmm. It's a really cool unification of design elements. Once again, like the Sideswipe. And, you know, the alt mode, I am not talking about the alt mode as much because I'm way less knowledged in this stuff. So it's just, to me, it's like, it's a car. But, I'm curious what you guys think of this. Oh, actually, in the blog post, he says right there, animated style with G1 elements, proportions, and movie elements. Well, there we
go. I don't want to say boom, but...
Yeah, boom.
Boom.
Aaron, what are your thoughts on aligned jazz?
I love getting this look into the design process. Just with jazz, it's a neat fusion of things. I think also he looks like he has pretty big, like, brawler fists and forearms.
Yeah.
But it's really cool. I dig.
Also, there's a very cool progression of the design.
Oh yeah. The timeline. The 5-step timeline, rough sketch, final sketch, basic flat colors, which are crazy colors.
Basic flat looks like toy design stuff with the sectioning of the body like that, which really makes me curious if that was something they asked the artists to do just in case they decided to approach this from a toy angle.
Right.
Omegas, how are you feeling about Align Jazz?
Quite good, actually. I mean, like Aaron, I'll agree. It's nice to see something a little bit behind the curtain on the design process. Especially, like, just the artist in me really likes seeing the step-by-step progression of where the art came from.
Definitely.
It is a cool design. Like, Part of me is trying to figure out how the taillights end up on the hands when we can see the front wheels and the rear wheels. Nowhere close to them.
And there's still a wheel well cut into those things on his forearms, too.
Uh-huh.
Mass shift.
There you go.
In aligned continuity. Everything.
Obviously. I'm actually wondering what... I am seeing a little bit of the movie design, especially in the... the added toe just jutting out of the feet.
Yeah, that and the... How would you describe it? You know, the thing on the front of his shin looks kind of like a flux capacitor, but doesn't. You know, that the archway?
Okay.
That thing. I want to say that was on Human Alliance Jazz, but now I'm not sure if I'm attributing that properly.
Mine's too far away to see it.
Binoculars!
I could get up. No,
it's probably closer than mine. That's two walls and a bin.
Mine
away.
Is a 7-hour flight away.
I can see mine from here.
Mine's farther than everyone else's. Ha! Yeah, this looks really cool. This was, again, inspired by Eric Siebenhaler. Again, this is all, I'm parroting what's on the blog. Please check out the blog. Santa Lux is a really cool blog. And it's also making mention of the fact that there is a pop-up book coming out that Emiliano Santalucia did some work on. And given the stuff I've seen on his blog over the last little while I've been checking it out, I think I want to get that pop-up book. Because he mentions in the Jazz blog post that the pop-up book's going to feature a couple more of his redesigns, and he may post them after the book's out, but I want to support this dude somehow when it comes to Transformers.
Yeah.
And I'm not, I mean, it sounds like it was a kind of a freelance-ish arrangement, so I'm not sure how directly helpful it is to just buy stuff you worked on, but nonetheless, some great stuff in there. How do you guys feel about the idea of, just as a bit of a hypothetical, like, these aligned designs, if they were to pop up toyetically somehow, I mean, we just talked about the color layout, you know, looking like it could be a bit of a toy color layout, but, you know, you also make the good point that it's difficult to see how those things on his forearms get there. Do you guys think it would be feasible sometime in the next, say, 5 years for these things to show up somehow toyetically? I say in 5 years so we can actually have a chance of saying yes.
All things are possible. We've gotten War Within designs as official toys. You know, we've gotten a lot of things as toys. We got IDW Drift as a toy.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I think it would definitely be a ways away.
Yeah. Just too bad, because I really do like that design. Like, the aligned continuity actually puts me right where I like to be aesthetically. It's modern, it's up to date. You know, I can see the movie elements, but there's a lot more logic to how the parts are arranged and how the designs flow, which really, really hits me just right. The jazz hits me way just right.
Yeah, these aligned designs, I think, are a great example of a comparison you can make between logic is a great word for it. You know, having a modern futuristic, you know, very line driven aesthetic, but still being able to see how things come together. Whereas the movie designs, I've never really felt the movie designs literally looked like shredded metal, but a way I could describe it is I felt a lot of the movie designs looked like a very logical way in a scientific sense of figuring out where every single piece of surface area is going to go. That was kind of aiming to do that before settling on a full-on silhouette. So I think that's like, I don't know how to explain it any better. It feels kind of like the movie designs tried to figure out where everything goes more so than actually figure out what the robot looks like before then settling on the robot. And that's how you end up with some of the weird stuff on the movie designs of like just these little tiny bits and pieces everywhere. Cause like, well, that bit actually is this, that's the square 12 centimeters from this aspect of the car that had to move over here. And it ends up with a somewhat odd looking aesthetic. Whereas these feel bolder, but still have some cool bits of car moving all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm always happy to feature some Emiliano Santalucia stuff on here because we've done it 3 times now, and hopefully I can do it 4th and a 5th time.
You're just pandering because now you know that he listens to the podcast.
That too. But he seems like a cool dude, and I like it when artists who work on this kind of stuff actually actively want to share what they've worked on, because even though the toy industry and you know its related fiction industries are a lot different now than they were in the 80s or 90s, like stuff like, you know, stuff out of an aligned continuity Bible, it's really easy for that stuff to never see the light of day unless people push for it. And I really appreciate that he's sharing not only that, but, you know, sharing the Thundertron stuff, I think, right in tandem with the release of that toy on a mass level was a really cool idea. Because it let us, I think, find a really good appreciation for the toy while it's really fresh. And that was like, that was like striking when the anvil is red hot.
That's where I'd almost like to see a toy blog type of deal out of Hasbro of as toys come out to be like, hey, and here's the story behind. You'd think that'd be an easy feature to put on a webpage.
I have said, I think a billion times, you know, any kind of designer commentary, I will eat it up because I find that on Transformers, especially, I find that stuff tremendously interesting. And we've had it in America briefly. Was it Cybertron, I think? Was it that era? Cybertron or something like that? Like mid-2000s where they were posting little like 2-paragraph designer commentaries?
Yeah. Something like that. The codes on the back of the Cyber Keys, you put them in the website and they tell you, well, we were originally, you know, and that's how you found out that, that's how you found out that you were originally supposed to have like Alpha Trion and Trailbreaker as the Cybertron toys and get a little behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, and I thought that stuff was a great start to something that kind of just tapered off. And I know I've also said very recently, I think even that I understand that the American corporate machine that drives the toy industry over here is a lot different than, you know, the independent scene or the Japanese scene. But wherever it can be done, I think that getting info out like this is great. Because, I mean, in America, you want to see a very forward-thinking toy company. Look at all the companies that have started to list credits on toys. Like, you know, Nika is a really easy example. And a lot of that stuff came out, I think, of the McFarlane era. But I always wish that would carry over onto more mainstream things. Like, I'd love a credits list on the bottom of a Transformers box. Unless I've been missing it this entire time. More of that kind of stuff would be eaten up by myself and I think at least 2 or 3 others. So you've got a huge audience out here to cater to.
What also just seems like something that would be easy enough to do. You know, hey, I can't even, unfortunately, I'm pulling a blank. Is Bill Rowley? I'm trying to remember of names that I know that are
he's still
on Transformers.
There. I think he's the only one who's still there from the old crew.
Yeah. Hey, Bill, that toy you just got done with, you know, write 2 paragraphs about something that happened during production or something. You know, it seems like that would be easy enough of a thing to do to be able to hold back and end up with a neat little web feature to get fans involved. Granted, we're not a major portion of the base, but just be like a little, hey, you know what? We think you'd like this, and then
I immediately have a theory on what might be stopping that, is I bet you they'd have to get someone from legal in there to proofread every one of those blog posts, and I bet you that's one of the first things that would be cut out of an annual budget, is paying someone from legal to proofread behind-the-scenes blog posts.
Yeah, well, it's not like, and then we took it to the top-secret production facility, and just like,
oh, even you know,
the design feature that I like most, that I found most interesting in designing it, was the head reveal, because blah, blah, blah.
I don't know why
legal would have to jump on that.
It's the whole thing about the shareholders and the company image, you know, that which I think is BS myself, like, just from an artistic standpoint, but... That whole thing of, like, they have to watch what they say and how they say it so they don't reflect poorly on the product or the franchise or the company, et cetera, et cetera. Like, they have to be...
Well, I mean, still, that'd be pretty easy to, like, you know, have a manager look at or the web guy look at and make sure he's not going, oh, that f***ing guy in accounting. No, okay, see, there, I did it.
60,
yeah, see, this black blood.
That's in 20 minutes. I can't believe it. That's fantastic.
It's only going to go downhill.
That jerk face there, how's that? In accounting, he said that they wouldn't vouch my travel exposure because of this, that, and the other thing. It's not going to be something like that.
I agree with you. I think it should be that easy. But trying to put myself in a corporate mindset and feeling real dirty while I do so, I feel like one thing that might, you know, something that we wouldn't think of immediately might even be like, well, this feature didn't turn out quite the way that we wanted it to. Like, even things like that, there are times that they'll be like, well, the shareholders don't want to hear that you didn't like how it turned out. Strike that.
Make it so that you only talk positive. That should be pretty easy to just do a quick, like I said, a manager look over it.
It should be, but the way
and
that
Aaron not have a whole bunch of black blood in his system and profane.
The way a corporate system's going to work is, you know, how many hands can we get in the pot? How unsimple can we make this simple process? And it feels like that's a real easy way for that whole thing to fall apart before it can start. Speaking as the devil's advocate.
It wouldn't be that hard, really. I mean, after the design, after all that's done for the toy, two or three paragraphs, you know, email it to legal if they okay it, you know, post it on the website once the toy is released publicly.
Yeah, so, I would love that.
You know, that way nothing, you know, that way nothing does publicly get out. It's like, you don't risk him, you know, getting a rage post or something like, they took out my spring-loaded gimmick? Argh! Idiots!
Lateral bicep swivels were going to be a part of this design!
They always lose a missile. They need to come with three.
Like, I have always wondered if there were emails being sent very fast and very nervously when, was it Dawn was starting to post about Titaniums? And was, like, I think it was Titanium Ultra Magnus being the easiest example of, like, they put the head on the wrong part of the body. The head was supposed to be here to fold into this thing, but instead it's back here. And I always wondered, in the back of my head, like, I wonder if someone legal is, like, spitting their coffee and sending as many emails as they can to get the gears moving. And, I mean, that's one of the cruxes of the devil's advocate position, is that it's a huge corporation, and nothing moves slower than a huge corporation. The more people that it has to help things go faster, the slower it will go, is often the way that stuff tends to run. From my limited experience. So I'm sure that may be something that's... If this has been an initiative, it may be something that's getting in the way. If it's not, and if it totally could be an initiative, then, you know, totally, like, I'm sure, you know, the entire Transformers team's listening to this prestigious Transformers podcast. And just, you know, take our idea and run with it. There you go. We just saved Transformers.
That's a freebie for you guys.
Yeah. You're welcome. Anyway, many thanks to Emiliano Santalucia for sharing some more of that stuff. Anyone who's worked on Transformers, share whatever you want, and we will, most of us will thank you profusely for it.
Don't worry about that little NDA paperwork. That's okay.
Yeah. What's an NDA for anyway?
It's just between friends.
Now, NDAs on MMOs, you take all your screenshots anyway, because when the NDA breaks, you just post all your screenies and they don't care. So
what's an MMO?
I don't know. Dead genre, apparently. Moving on from there, let's talk about some new picture picks. Omegas, I want to know what your new picture pick this week is.
Grimlock.
All right.
Grimlock.
Apparently someone was going to pick Grimlock this week.
Nope. First in-hand picks of the Beast, and oh my god, this thing is gorgeous. Him and his fat tail. I love him.
Tail's not fat, it's big and beautiful.
I actually kind of like how it's the fattest tail I've ever seen on a Grimlock, and yet it's the only time I haven't seen any kind of any tail kibble hanging off the legs.
Yeah, where does it go? Is it in the back of his legs or something? Like, I haven't looked, I haven't scrutinized these, but...
No! Like, I don't see it in the back of his legs. I mean, granted, they don't give us a shot of the back. I mean, I could... If classic Grimlock design holds true, I'm pretty sure on his back is a big backpack of T-Rex head.
I mean, yeah,
especially with the way that it looks like his lights work.
I was waiting for a rear shot to show all of the T-Rex back there, but I mean, even with this stuff being primarily front angles, it's surprising how tight his silhouette is from a lot of front angles. Like, I can see there's a shot from the top down with his accessories where you can kind of see the bottom of the T-Rex neck. Kind of.
Yeah.
But it's very well done.
Oh, yes. And really liking the light-up gimmicks. Just far more effective than we've seen with the Power Riser series.
Mm-hmm.
I love how the chest is done with all the gaps that are lighting up through the paint and plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, part of me was, like, when I first saw the preview pictures and you could see the LED in his head was kind of showing through the plastic... First reaction is, that's kind of odd. But then I see the big pictures, and there's something in me that really, really likes seeing his whole head just erupting in flame.
Finally, the red LED works.
Yeah. It actually looks pretty good. And considering this is Fall of Cybertron Grimlock, and his beast mode is all about the rage, you know, it's kind of a perfect thing for him to do.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the tone of the plastic on him? Like the gray and the bronze.
This bronze goldish is a little flat. But considering that's the thing. It's the War for Cybertron / Fall of Cybertron. You know, the color palettes are usually a little muted. Mm-hmm. So, it's appropriate. I mean, it's not the bright gold Grimlock I'm used to, but then again, it's not supposed to be. I mean, it still looks good to me. I mean, it's not that, you know, it's not the unpainted gray plastic, you know, that looks unfinished. You know, it does have a you know, it's dark enough to have a metallic look to it, which is all I really ask of it.
Yeah, that's the thing I think that, you know, given how unpainted the plastic can be on this guy, easy example being the robot mode shoulders, I think that the fact that it is actually catching light and holding shadow is a step above the usual kind of flat gray, like the Games Workshop gray that's able to just, like, devour all light and be as flat as it can be.
Yeah, right.
'Cause the first crits I saw on this guy, you know, amidst all, a lot of people are really into this, but the first crits I saw were how flat he looks, and I was sitting there looking at him like, yeah, I can't deny... You know, especially in these photos, which have a real muted lighting scheme going on, like he looks pretty flat. But I think I can see past that because that robot mode silhouette is very attractive, and the dino mode silhouette. I mean, the tail's fat, but I find he has two good silhouettes, and I'm really appreciating how a lot of the stuff that makes them up doesn't seem to be hanging off either one of them.
Mm-hmm. And really, if you look at the robot, or I mean the dino mode, that's where the bulk of the paint goes, because he's got a lot of detail going through the side of him that's been painted on.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so yeah, he's got the dumpy tail, but that dino mode just pops. I mean, he's got a lot of detail going on.
Yeah, and the size, this is a guy who's actually... He's winning something from the downsizing of the Generations line this time around. Because he is towering over Optimus Prime.
As he should be.
Yeah. And I suspect he still will look good with the War of Cybertron. Sorry, War 4 Cybertron Fall of. War 4 Fall of. The War 4 Cybertron Optimus Prime from a couple years ago. I think, you know, just filling in that space in with my mental Photoshop, it seems like it would still work out pretty well. I don't know if I'm chomping at the bit for him as much as a lot of the real excited folks are, but I'm certainly not dumping on the toy.
It's the Grimlock thing.
Yeah, and I'm so happy that the light-up feature on a Voyager is exciting to me again.
Yeah.
After speaking as someone who likes LEDs on toys, man, Powerizers just slaughtered my enthusiasm for LEDs really fast. It's great to see the feature returning in good form. There's no huge obvious light box battery container hanging off of him.
Well, it's I mean that's a good place where they use the silhouette and the shape. You know, that's all that chest is, and it's the right way to do it. Not have a weird hunk that hangs out on it.
Yeah, and I think that it would have been so easy to fall into the design allure of let's try to get the light up feature into his shield and sword. And I'm really glad they didn't go for that.
Yeah, traditionally when I've seen that attempted, I remember they attempted that in the Armada line and it just never worked. It seems like a good idea at the time, but in my experience, LED lights just don't travel through the sword blades very well.
They need a very specific shape and a very specific funneling of the light.
Yeah, it needs to be aligned right. That's always seems to be the worst thing of, hey, we've got the super bright LED, but it doesn't actually point at the thing we're trying to light up.
Yeah, or even, like, Masterpiece Grimlock, lighting up his gun was really cool. Lighting up his sword, as I recall, it works, but even then, like, and a great example from not Fans Project, a third-party company, who's related somewhat to Fans Project, the Battle Tanker, having the LED feature for the blade, it lights up the hilt really well, but the actual blade doesn't catch a lot of it. It's just, it's all about refracting that light inside the clear plastic. And it seems like that's a science that I think a lot of toy design everywhere is still kind of learning when it's not something that's really internal and just lighting up like a dot from the inside, like trying to illuminate an entire solid object is, I think, still pretty difficult.
The problem is that you're trying to get a lot of light through an object that's becoming denser and denser the more you go through it. The only way it really works if it's hollow inside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that that's how a lightsaber lights up so well.
Oh, yeah, it's a big tube. Well, I mean, and the Force Effect ones, they literally have like a strip of lights, like not even LEDs necessarily. I remember the brief 2 months I was really into Force Effects lightsabers a few years ago. There were all these different kinds of light strips. There was at least two or three like major ones, and they all had like different qualities and fragilities.
Yeah, I noticed that in the one I have. Where as soon as you turn it on, it like lights in like 4 or 5 segments.
Yeah. I mean, the crux of this all is, hey, the light up dino head is pretty cool.
Right.
I'm excited to see this guy come out. It sounds like we'll be seeing him pretty soon, unless Soundwave and Sound Blaster just clog the shelves for the next couple months.
Oh, surely having a case that's only one toy really won't be a problem.
Absolutely. We'll be fine. That's why I didn't order either of them online once I looked at the case assortments. And also, I was like, maybe I should get Grimlock online. I looked at the case assortments, 3 Grimlocks, 1 Blaster. I was like, yeah, I'm not going to have trouble finding Grimlock, I don't think. I mean, I might eat crow on this, but his case assortment tells me he shouldn't be hard to find.
Yeah.
It's actually going to be Blaster who's difficult to find. Aaron, you got any quick thoughts on Grimlock while we're here?
Looking forward to seeing him in the stores.
Mm-hmm.
Covered most of the points. I do, like I said, I'm with you. I like the fact that it's not a tumor that hangs off the side of him that is the light-up gimmick, that it's something that's integrated well. And
to be fair, it's only been that with the Power Risers.
Yeah, well...
Like still, I don't want to give the impression
they've been horrible tumors with the Power Risers. Mm. It's not There's only been one Power Riser that's done it right so far. Hint for what we got this week.
Uh-oh.
But I mean all of the others, it's good idea, bad execution. Bad execution's even a little bit mean, but just not great.
It's behind the times as far as the capabilities of this franchise.
When people are talking about gutting that off of a toy to make it work better, you know that it's like, well, maybe, you know, and again,
I'm going to clear this up for just a sec. When I say just Power Risers, I mean just Power Risers. You go back even just like a year before that to like Leader Starscream from the movie line. That was good electronics. It's just... the Powerize has really soured it for the last like year or so.
Yeah. It's a place where they had a gimmick idea and then they really leaned into it. And I wonder if it just didn't, maybe they had hoped with waves 2 and 3, they could have gotten a better handle on it and never did.
I hope they would.
Maybe.
Because Megatron was a good start. Megatron was an okay start for a wave 1. I was like, yeah, this could go places. And the hardcore didn't go places.
Megatron still, we talked about before, Megatron has that advantage of already having a giant weapon. You know, you can hide it. You can hide a battery pack in there. But when you get to like, when you get to like Dreadwing, and he's got a good looking gun that doesn't lock in place and has this gigantic battery block hanging off of it.
Right.
Starscream and Bulkhead, I think, are great examples of like,
oh yeah,
like it, like that was wave 2, and it just it went from, yeah, that could work, to like, oh no, that will never work if this is wave 2.
Yeah.
If this is the improvement, no, this is done. We're put that back on the shelf. And I was like, well, let's see wave 3. Oh, okay.
I don't think we've seen a Beast Hunter with it yet, though, so I think they kind of threw that idea out the window.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if that's a legitimate thing that they've gotten wise to, grats on course correcting.
Yeah.
You know, especially when, because when you look at, I mean, we know, we have a decent idea that, like, the design time lead-up on these things is a year or so. So it may be something where they had hoped at a certain point that it would do better than it would, than it did, impression wise. So as soon as it was like, man, we really can't get these things to work, but we have 3.5 waves in production.
Well, we saw a preview of this a BotCon or two ago when they first showed us Voyager Starscream, and yeah, the way they described it sounded awesome.
In theory, it's actually a really good idea. The trick is that it relies on being able to get that light through the translucent plastic to make the effect work right.
Yeah.
And that doesn't really work.
Yeah.
Not with a moving LED that isn't strong enough to get through the plastic on the arms.
The impression I got from the slideshow, if I recall, you know, way back, is as I remember understanding it, I thought it was going to be the MechTech port, like the MechTech plug that goes into the toy, was going to be the source of the light. So it'd be like you're sticking the LED into the toy, then activating it. And I thought that sounded great.
Right. Well, plus it also comes to, I think one of my biggest issues with them is the fact that they just don't lock into place.
Yeah, yeah.
So many of those would be so much better if it just would click and hold into place. And I don't know if that's,
well, that was a learning curve.
They didn't
curve.
Want batteries to burn out or what the deal was, but
that was a learning curve we went through in Dark of the Moon as well. That's what surprised me about the lack of locking. Cause I was like,
yeah,
we spent Dark of the Moon's Voyagers going from non-locking MechTech weapons on Deluxes, you know, and then the Voyagers started to have them lock, and it was like, hey, it works on these ones. Why doesn't it work on?
Well, that's a fault of the lighting feature, since it's such a simple circuit, you know, because all you're doing, you're there's no on-off switch when you move the toy. When you move that MechTech weapon, you're just aligning the circuit so it automatically comes on.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, no on, no off. If they had an off switch, they could lock it in place. But leaving it on, it's going to drain the battery. The gimmick's not going to work as long.
But then they just kind of went F it on a certain toy that I think we're going to be talking about later on.
Yeah.
And I've heard on that certain toy, some people have left that thing on for like days at a time, and it did not really dim.
Well, on that certain toy, and many of these toys, its LEDs are pretty low power, so it'd be an issue maybe after like a week or two, maybe.
I love how we're being cagey, even though I think you name dropped this toy last week.
Yeah, I did.
That's the best
I think
part.
I did.
We're actually being cagey about it still. That's fantastic.
That's all right.
So that's your, you know, ladies and gentlemen, that's our Powerizer MechTech Weapon Year in Review podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. We thought that you'd enjoy that a lot more than any kind of like best or worst toys of the year thing. So, there you go. Aaron, what's your new picture pick?
My new picture pick is kind of a thing. The Fans Project Function X charity promotion.
Oh!
Ooh.
So through Big Bad Toy Store and TF Source.
And yes, ages 3 and up in Canada.
And ages 3 and up in Canada, apparently. If you pre-order a Function X1, Each of those places were going to donate $20, either $20 cash. I think Big Bad was doing $20 in stock.
Bumblebees.
Maybe Bumblebees, whatever. Hey, kids love Bumblebee toys.
Hey, kids love Bumblebee.
If I've learned anything being out and about in toy stores in the last couple weeks, Bumblebee, F yes.
Kids still love Bumblebee?
Yes, kids still love Bumblebee. Right. Up until, as we're recording this tomorrow, so too late for anybody listening. But
if you didn't hear about it and you're listening to this podcast, like where have you been?
Yeah. Like so, what was it? The hint was that it's a four-wheeled vehicle that converts to robot mode and features two scoped rifles, which got it down to this is most likely the not Chrome Dome.
Yep. And I believe that some people saw his like fans project name on the box picture. There's also a shot of the back of the box show. Yeah. Code. There's also a shot of the back of the box showing a very Chrome Dome looking head.
Yes.
Staring back at you. And also the descriptions, there was a description of its size somewhere as well. I forgot where we got that from.
Yeah.
But someone mentioned its size, and I don't remember what the numbers were, but the size described sounded a lot like that black prototype Fans Project Chrome Dome some of us got to see at BotCon 2011.
Right.
If it's not Chrome Dome, I'll be very surprised.
Right. So it's roundabouts the price tag that we thought these were going to be, plus you're making a $20 donation to Toys for Tots or Salvation Army or whatever the Canadian equivalent is. Do you guys even have charity? You understand what that is?
I actually have been trying to figure out a way to buy this without giving to charity because I hate children. Okay. So I'm kind of annoyed that the option isn't there.
But so I threw a pre-order down. And in the worst case, at least with Big Bad, you could theoretically scam them to clear out their stuff. Well, it's per pre-order. Right?
Oh!
Big Bad allows you to cancel your pre-orders.
Oh. I'm sure Big Bad has a system in place to deal with that already. No way they couldn't be aware. There's no way.
Well, holiday spirit, and this is for Big Bad's sake, at least, I bet that there's a portion of this is like we're just going to clear out the stuff in the stock room that we can't get rid of, you know?
Yeah, and kids love
it's not
Bumblebee.
Even saying, you know, it's $20 wholesale cost worth of toys, which actually is probably going to be $30 to $50 worth of toys, depending on whatever, and they'll probably just go through and clear out the old, any, like, G.I. Joe figures that have been sitting around forever.
Star Wars, too.
Star Wars figures. Yeah, I bet there's a ton of the peg warmer Star Wars.
Not just the peg warmers. They still have a ton of the really good Darth Maul. I can't believe that Darth Maul from the vintage line is still just chilling out. Like, anyone who was vaguely interested in Star Wars in 1999, that is your perfect Darth Maul. You should get it. I mean, I don't understand. That thing was like $5 at some points. And I was like, why? It's a really good figure. Why is this passing by? Like, it's the most posable Star Wars figure I have. I don't know. Here's a rant. I put in a pre-order. Because I want to help the kids. And I also want a Fans Project toy.
Yeah. So, it's a good way to kill two proverbial stones with one bird.
That's two proverbial birds with one stone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And pretty lively stones, too.
Yeah. I'm telling you, this black blood is not a safe thing for a podcast. I don't know.
Bird's just cracking stones in half with his feet. It's just like...
But... So, yes, it's a light brown-colored box with the Fans Project clear plastic around it.
Yeah.
Right now, at least. That'd probably be something that'll be different on the inside, but...
I'm really excited to see how these turn out. Because, I mean, whenever a Fans Project line has a different, you know, subtitle, like in this case, Function X, that often denotes a different designer focusing on that particular group of toys. So this will be the first time we're seeing this designer, as far as I understand it, this possibly is the first time we're seeing this designer, you know, working on the forefront of these figures by him or herself, whoever it is.
Right.
So it could be, you know, production quality being Fans Project quality, but the design wise and engineering wise, it could be somewhat different or somewhat unique compared to the stuff that we've gotten before. So I'm really, really curious. And it's math too. I actually forgot what Function X is in terms of calculus or math or whatever. I used to be really good at that stuff.
Yeah, Function X is a calculus thing.
Yeah, I was the most kick-ass at calculus back in grade 12 when I did honors calculus.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to university, and calculus got way less fun, and so I stopped doing it. I liked calculus when it wasn't even, like, because calculus, even in my opinion, to a degree, physics, are two subjects that, at least on the first year level, they're a lot less science or math and a lot more just an iteration of puzzle solving.
Yeah.
And I found that really fun. But then when they got more mathematic, I was like, well, this is less fun.
You should get into things like differential equations and...
I have notes I wrote on differential equations somewhere.
Linear algebra.
Yep. I wrote notes on that once, too.
Yeah.
I forgot it all.
You should take linear algebra for like a year. You start to hate math.
Yep.
When your variables are becoming whole equations and matrix solutions.
Yep. Oh.
And it's not even like the cool matrix stuff that we got. It's like evil math.
I am of the opinion there's something wrong when math can be fun when you're a kid and then turn less fun. Because it's already hard enough to find a kid who enjoys math.
Yeah.
Like to put a kid off, like to put someone off math who loved math when they were a child. Like, how do you do that?
Last time I actually had fun in math was when we got the scientific calculators for the first time, and I found out I could write ass face on it.
Well, we had those for calculus back in high school, in honors calculus. And
I had Tetris on mine.
We had the answers on ours because the teacher wasn't entirely aware of what they could do. So we had entire formula sheets like busted into them somehow. I forgot how we all did that. It was mostly one guy in the class. Anyway, if you like puzzle solving, try to, if it's not expensive, you know, or prohibitive, you know, doing a first year calculus of some kind can actually be pretty fun. I almost kind of miss it because I started to forget why I liked it in the first place. And it was just actually a little while ago. I was thinking about it and I was like, I remember that I liked it because it was puzzle solving. It was the same kind of satisfaction I get from a Sudoku grid. That's a weird topic to get onto.
Yeah.
Blue Jays, Star Wars, Darth Maul, math.
Hey, listen, math is necessary, all right? Don't let anyone tell you different. Math still has relevance to the world we live in. That's how I calculate tips. Anyway, my own new picture pick is going to be a piece of third-party toydom. I talked about one company's take on Predaking last week. Now I'm going to talk about Masterminds. Mastermind Creations... whether or not they're responding to the interviews and pictures that have been coming out for the Beasticons, they popped up with a full-on gray prototype of Bull from the Ferocicons. And if you've messed with one of the Mastermind Creations Airborne Squad, the Hearts of Steel Seekers, you will, if you stare at this guy enough, you'll start to see very similar aesthetics, especially in his arms. And especially on his waist in robot mode, where he has the thing of his skirt armor being mounted on a pair of revolving discs so that his skirts can swivel around his body independently. That's what I'm taking from the way this looks anyway, because that looks very similar to the way that the Seekers do it. And I'm very excited about this. This looks dead solid. The aesthetics look really cool. The head sculpt is fantastic. I'm really hoping they can find a way to light pipe some stuff into those eyes. And we also got to look at, you know, all of his modes. So the bull mode is actually kind of poseable, which I wasn't expecting at all. And all of the Predaking and weapon parts can mount on the bull mode.
Yeah.
Then they showed the foot mode. Looks pretty good. And they showed Predaking's sword. Bull's weapons you can see as part of the sword, but that's a big-ass sword. It looks like it's made from all of their melee weapons. This guy is not integrating the combiner parts, but I don't think Predaking necessarily needs to, because I like the idea of a giant robot bull with a huge cannon on its back. Yeah. And then Mastermind's sculpt, as I was hoping to see, is super crisp, and laden with surface detail. I really like what Mastermind have become over the last year or so. And, I was excited about this already, and I am super pumped for this. It is suiting my personal aesthetics more than the Beasticons, but I'm certainly not going to say the Beasticons look like crap. They are just a lot more, not soft, a lot more G1-y is the easiest way to put it. Whereas Masterminds look a lot more modern classics.
Okay.
That's kind of the way I see it. Like the Mastermind ones feel like they are being reinterpreted while maintaining the design basics, whereas the Beasticons feel like they are trying to go for a lot more of a this is an updated G1 mm-hmm. kind of look. And personally, I prefer what Mastermind are doing, and I also know that Mastermind's build quality is pretty damn solid right now. I'm not going to say that the Beasticons are not. I just don't know anything about them. It is funny how many people are looking at this bull and saying, well, that doesn't look like it's going to go with that hawk we saw at all. And everyone's like, well, that's because that's two different companies, bro. And it's, oh. So it looks like the arms race in third parties for 2013 will be between two Predakings.
Yeah. And this is always where I wonder, you know, is one or the other going to pause or go on a different idea, or again, how much lead in do they have to these before they're showing them? And it's like, well, we just got to plow ahead and maybe pick up our pace and get it out before everybody else.
Yeah. I don't know. I was questioning the decision by, I think they're called Unique Toys, to do a Predaking when Mastermind not only announced theirs at TFCon this past summer, but actually showed, you know, silhouetted line art for everything. And I was like, that they're probably getting far along the design process, but when Unique Toys show that they're doing a rather different aesthetic, I was like, well, you know, now it's a case of Giant versus Hercules, where it's two different design intents, so at least they're both justified.
Yeah.
But I mean, if I had to choose one right now, the Mastermind one is just way more up my alley, and I also like the way Mastermind make their stuff, so I have the advantage of kind of knowing what I'm getting to a degree. But I am hoping that the Beasticons turn out pretty well, because it would be cool to see an alternative. And the Beasticons have said that they're aiming for the Fans Project Colossus Bruticus or Make Toys Giant size. And as far as I know,
we'll look at that sword compared to Prime.
Yeah, it looks like Mastermind might be going for something a little bit bigger. So
I should hope so. It's going to take something big to hold that.
Mm-hmm. apparently the sword's called the Oppenheimer Sword, which I think is the best name for a sword I've heard in a long time. Omegas, what are your thoughts on the bull?
Very cool. I mean, very nice version of G1 Tantrum. Yeah, and I do dig the old Predacons. And so far Mastermind seems to be doing something a little bit more to my aesthetic tastes. So I'm really excited to see how this comes about. Especially because Tantrum's not my favorite Predacon. I mean, I'm really waiting until we get into that dive bomb rampage area.
I think this one excites me because Tantrum's like never had a good toy ever.
No. So
it's nice to see a Tantrum with like two legs and like, you know,
that's actual who can stand up balanced successfully. That's actually a really good way of kicking it off, by showing, hey, look, we made an awesome Tantrum.
Yeah.
I think we've proven ourselves.
And some folks who pulled up the silhouettes and looked at this again have realized that it's not Ramhorn, is it? Who's the Rhino? I'm bad at the Predacon names.
Headstrong.
Headstrong looks like he might be of a very shared engineering to this dude. Like they look like they have very similar body shapes, which I'm fine with.
Yeah, I mean, if they're similar body shapes, similar transformations, there's no reason not to share that if it saves money on the final project.
And on the bright side, it means you get somewhat more symmetrical looking legs.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I would kind of hope is, if they are very similar, it might be a good idea to not release the two legs one after the other. But if that makes more sense on a production level, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. Mm-hmm. But I'm super excited about this, Aaron. How hot on the Predacons are you?
I have the G1 reissue, and that's probably going to be it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these third party dudes just get huge and expensive so fast.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I stopped Hercules right quick and sold off parts of it. So I will be very happy for people to get these.
Yeah. I mean, I'll clear it up. I'm not saying, are you going to buy it so much as, just I'm not sure how into the Predacons you've actually been.
Yeah, like, no big love for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the Predacons, once you get over the whole, like, I always want a Predaking kind of thing, like the actual Predacons, I'm always curious how many people were super into them as a team of five robots.
Yeah.
And I think that's what excites me about seeing these third-party Predacons, is that we're finally going to have, like, a way to feature the robots that make up Predaking. Like, because the G1 Predaking toy, a couple of them were very much, like, a couple of them stood on their own really well. But specifically the legs were very much, yeah, these toys turn into legs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of feels like in order to be structurally stable, they had to make sure those legs were just like as rock solid as possible. So the robot modes ended up suffering as a result.
Yeah.
You know, like I had Rampage as a kid, and it's always been one of my favorite G1 formers.
Yeah, Rampage... And really, the top three, the Razor Claw, Rampage, and Dive Bomb. I always call him the one who used to be Swoop, which is not even proper anyway, because that's not what the comic story was. That's a bad misremembering of that comic story. But I mean, those three, especially Razor Claw and Rampage, those two were fantastic standalone toys. And Dive Bomb was an okay standalone toy, but. You know, I want to see them modernized. I was staring at these Mastermind pictures, trying to figure out how the connection points are going to work. You can't see the connector, but if you look at this picture I just shared, one of the bull mode pictures where his mouth is closed, you can see the huge ass ratchets of the connector that is folded away, and that's making me think that this is probably not going to be the knees fall backwards really easy kind of thing. If the ratchets are that big. And you know, anyone who's messed with, you know, Cyclops, who has heard and felt those enormous ratchets, could probably attest that Mastermind have done large ratchets before. So I'm excited to see how this turns out. I suspect the Ferocicons are going to be a thing we don't see till probably like spring at the earliest, because I believe that it was said that they're aiming to have. Hexatron, the six-shot analog, out sometime in February. Which is actually pretty close now. But, I'm excited to see this. And I'm hoping that we can kind of take from the whole Giant versus Hercules thing the idea that maybe being into one of these doesn't mean that you have to completely slag off on the other one. Because I think that was one of the most annoying things about the Hercules versus Giant thing was how much people wanted to try to show how much worse the other one was. And it's like, what does it matter? Like, other than trying to loudly prove to yourself that you don't need the other one, they both Giant and Hercules are good toys that have reasons to exist. I'm sure the Ferocicons and Beasticons are both going to have qualities to themselves that will legitimize their existence. There's already a thread, which is like, so which one are you picking? And in that thread is already, you know, like, well, I'm picking this one because this one looks like garbage. And it's like, yeah, that's a valid point to make. But I just found the candor of Giant versus Hercules was so disgusting for the longest time before more people were able to put in hands-on input on both. Hoping we could maybe come around somehow on that. But then again, I'm talking about the internet, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Excited to see how this turns out either way. Those are our new picture picks. We're also going to talk about something that almost made it into New Pick Picks, almost, just about, and that is the appearance of the Soundwave system at U.S. retail, that being the Fall of Cybertron Soundwave system. Now, there's already a Project Soundwave happening in Masterpiece, which is his cassettes being released there, but in terms of less expensive toys, the disc-based Soundwave system is showing up. At U.S. retail, Soundwave and Sound Blaster, the two Voyagers, who are straight-up repaints of each other right down to their disc animals, have shown up along with their attached play buddies, the disc two-packs that feature Rat-Bat, Rumble and Frenzy, and Ravage. So that stuff is all hitting now. I have been hearing some really cool mixed reports on these. The reason why we're making a topic out of this is Aaron, but also because it's a new play pattern hitting the shelves, so we're getting the word out.
You took the wind out of my crack of, well, who was the dummy that requested this?
Sorry. I really want to try to get a hold of these guys at retail sometime, though, because I have heard, like, literally just split reactions on that sound wave. Everything from he's too big and he looks dumb and he's got all this blah blah, to people who also have been like, oh, I love how big he is and he feels like a toy. There's ratchet joints everywhere. I really am loving the split I've seen on reactions on these, because it sounds like they are legit interesting.
Yeah.
Also, for folks who are trying to find the rare one, like, if I were to pick one, I'm actually more tempted by Sound Blaster, because that way I can, because his bio is that he was rebuilt, you know, out of, it's basically referencing Headmasters, but then him being so much larger could, like, fit in with that bio to a degree. But Sound Blaster and Buzzsaw are the one per case. I immediately wanted to see what his bio was. So Sound Blaster is a rebuilt sound wave, and thus, if you wanted to play in that he's now larger, could make that part of your personal fiction. He's also the one per case. It's 3 sound waves and 1 sound blaster. So, you know, it might be tricky. And I'm going to say, like,
blaster in that case too.
Oh,
sound wave, sound blaster, blaster, all basically the same toy.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, blaster, I'm liking, I mean, blaster, I don't think he's shown up in the States yet, but I am digging how much is different on him.
Yeah.
But Soundwave, like, you know, I've seen some people getting real, like, back and forth about his size, and it's like, come on, like, he is pretty big compared to everyone else. That is a talking point. It is a very legit con that someone could have. I don't think I'll have it myself, because I'll just get over it, but, you know, you look at him, he's large, because he's accommodating a pretty interesting gimmick. There is one thing about the gimmick that kind of bummed me out. I should have expected it, but you know how they say, like, you can fit up to 3 discs in his chest? The way you do that is that you just keep pulling the plunger on his back farther and farther out, which means if you have, like, you know, multiple discs in his chest,
if you have all 3, he's got a huge plunger hanging out his back.
Yeah. And I kind of,
That's payload. What, movie 1 payload?
Yeah. It's to be expected. Yeah. It's been there before, but
to be fair, the plunger only happens after you insert the disc. It's flat against his back otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, if you push them all out, it's fine. It's a dumb thing to get hung up on, I think, at the end of the day, because it's not like you have to have the plunger sticking all the way out of his back for things to work, but...
Yeah, if you're in play pattern mode, then...
Yeah, you're sucking it back to turn him in, because the plunger can be pulled all the way back out, I believe, in his when you transform him into vehicle mode. So it's a great way to make his vehicle mode like a storage for the the discs. I'm curious to see this dude. And I'm really curious to see how... I want to hear the range of how the auto-transforming discs work, because I want to hear if it's like everyone has the same experience, or if because they're spring-loaded, maybe it's really going to vary from case to case. Like, who knows? It's pretty cool. A little bit exciting. And in Singapore, the Autobot discs have already shown up. So this stuff's trucking on out there. It's all on its way. So I'm not chomping at the bit, especially because it's a Voyager set where it's 3 to a case for the popular one. Right. I don't think it's going to be hard to find this dude once he saturates. Hopefully he saturates.
Well, I think once it hits, because you might have the theoretical repurchaser / scalper grab the first wave, but after that, it's the sound wave is going to be the one that floods. It'll be Sound Blaster. It'll be the one to hard come to buy.
Mm-hmm.
Especially at a 3-to-1.
Yeah, Sound Blaster and Blaster are potentially going to be hard to find, but at the same time, I think I wouldn't say it's unreasonable to look at Sound Blaster and Blaster as being the less enticing members of their waves.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's Sound Wave versus Sound Blaster, and it's Blaster versus Grimlock, who's the new toy. So maybe it'll balance out nicely. Aaron, how are you feeling about the discs and about the new Sound Wave dealie? Are you?
I think it's neat, mostly because they're getting rid of light and sound gimmick for, at least in this one, for the Voyager wave. And the discs are two Legends-y guys at the Legend. I think they're at the Legends price point or just above. So
yeah,
it seems like it will be good toyetic value there.
Yeah. The only downside I think of the discs is that as they auto transform, there's very little on them jointed that isn't part of the auto transform.
Yeah. So still, I think it's also a great case of cross toy play.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, where this toy is cool and this toy is cool, but when you have both of them, it makes them both cooler. And we haven't seen that for a while in Transformers.
Hmm. Yeah, I think the only, to me, real legit bummer about the discs is that there's no way to have Rumble and Frenzy wielding any kind of pile drivers. And there's probably not an easy way to get Ratbat or Laserbeak or Buzzsaw to chill out on Soundwave's arm. And that's the only stuff that I would really want.
Doesn't
out
the
of...
Toy Art show that, though?
It does.
Yeah.
On Sound Blaster, I believe it does.
It's lying to you.
So, I mean, that's the little thing where I'm like, oh, I wish they could do that. But, you know, I'm certainly not going to be mad that they're not all superposable or anything. I kind of wish that Rumble and Frenzy had arms, and I can't, like, as far as posability, and I kind of wish maybe there is a way, I just haven't looked it up yet, but I'm hoping there's some way you can fudge Laserbeak to chill out on Soundwave's body somewhere. But Omegas, how you feeling about the return of actually the debut of video game oriented Voyagers?
Well, Grimlock aside, yeah, I'm really digging this. I'm still a little confused why they would do Soundwave and Sound Blaster in the first wave and not, you know, go Autobot Decepticon on it.
Yeah, it's odd.
Yeah.
Seems like they have two molds that they're doing for this assortment, so give the other one a little bit more design time, maybe?
It's making me take my hand and wave it left and right a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just feels a little bit odd. Like, that's the only part that concerns me, that there's going to be two toys on the shelf that are identical except for the color scheme, which, you know, I just worry about how hard that's going to make it to get Blaster and Grimlock later on. But other than that, I really like the idea of the play pattern returning. I mean, it might not be ideal for a lot of people, but, you know, it's been a long time since we had a Soundwave that worked properly. Yeah, and, you know, however you feel about that big plunger in his back, you know, at least it's optional, and at least he can actually eject discs for the first time. So, you know what? I'm going to go with it.
And Adam from 16-Bit was tweeting about the toy, and there's something really interesting he mentioned on there that I'd missed in any coverage previous. But apparently one of Soundwave's hands is sculpted in a pose where he's reaching an index finger forward. And his it's made in a way where he's able to actually reach up and touch his own eject button. So that's pretty fantastic. That's for anything that may be wrong with that toy, for them, like, that's something you've got to intentionally design in. And whenever a figure is able to reach, like I said this about Assaulter as well, a figure is able to either draw his own weapons or activate his own features, I think is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So. And that's something that usually needs to be done on a somewhat intentional level. So that's pretty cool. Anyway, little heads up there about those toys showing up. Maybe you'll catch them in time for Christmas. Who knows? I doubt I'm going to. We've got a listener question from Minimagnus, who says, "Hey, WTF and TFW crew, I've been listening for a long time and finally decided to send in some questions. Number one, if your home was burning down and you already had evacuated family, friends, and pets, would you try to save any of your collection? Are there possessions that would come first, or would you just leave everything in the burning building?" Omegas, what would you do?
I would leave my family to suffer as I scooped up all of the toys I could carry and run into the night.
Christmas cheer.
Well, it said that you've already evacuated family, friends, and pets.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah.
The assumption of the question is that you're not a horrible human being.
I'm actually offended that the question would assume I do that first.
I don't have any pets.
How presumptuous.
I don't know how to answer this question.
What's Jacob, then?
Well, he's oh, there's no roommate setting on there. There's friends. I'll list him under friends.
Okay.
Not the same thing. You know this.
Roommates do not have to be friends.
You don't sometimes give him a treat, then rub his belly.
Okay.
In Canada, we do this differently.
That mental image makes me laugh.
I don't have to give him a treat to rub his belly.
Okay.
No, to make a serious answer out of this.
What?
Who wants to hear that? My household has family members. It would be very difficult to evacuate in a timely process, so that would be by far the biggest priority. As for running back in and trying to salvage anything, that's hard. I guess it depends. What part of my house has caught fire?
The whole thing. Okay. Simultaneously, every wall has caught fire.
Some bad movie.
Okay, well, then 60% of my collection's probably already engulfed by then. Which actually would do in most of the ones I would try to save, unfortunately. I might grab my Star Saber, since he's, out from the exterior walls, but... I don't know. Honestly, while I love my collection, I think I would have far higher priorities in mind in an emergency situation. I'm not so obsessive that I can... No! I'm not leaving without my G1 Skyfire. Screw you!
Alright.
and stop correcting me. I know it's Jetfire, but it's Skyfire to me. Because my dad has weird priorities when the house is setting fire like that.
So, it sounds like you definitely would be focused on the human beings, as it were.
Well, the human beings have a much higher,
higher
value
resale
on
value.
eBay.
Like, I know where to shop. I need some real cheap human beings.
I'll PM you later.
All right. Aaron, what would you do if your building was on fire?
Taking the premise of the question and all of the family, friends, pets are out, there are two shoe boxes that are full of all the stuff that I've had since ever. And I think that would be the priority. Because that's also memories there versus just everything else's stuff. A lot of the things that I have through insurance I would be able to replace, but not the old busted up the Powermaster Optimus Prime that was my first Optimus Prime and things like that I'd never be able to replace.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the key. After that, again, it all depend on where and how the fire was in the house, because there's a window that I could conveniently start throwing things out into my backyard much more quickly than getting them down the steps and out. But
yeah,
that's just trying to find a way to break the premise of the question is, what's the one thing you save?
Well, actually, I was just looking. The question never says the one thing.
Yeah.
It's just like, is there anything about
one thing?
I'd save my whole collection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In one trip, just scoop it all up, throw it in a cardboard box. it all depends on the situation. I'd love to try to save my parts of my collection because I like toys. And I couldn't tell you what would come first, though, because there's no way I'd be able to process that in that kind of situation. It would really just be like...
Sit down, think about it, stroke your chin a little bit.
Yeah, like what's easy reach that I know I like? Like, I mean, Make Toys Green Giant is nearby. It's one figure to grab. So that's an easy one because I just have to reach out, grab it, and walk away. Or run away, hopefully.
Stroll.
Really just anything that's like a large self-contained unit, a Make Toys Giant is an easy answer because if you grab it there, I've got six toys. I'm out of here. I couldn't really tell you though. Depending on the situation, it'd be really difficult to sit there going like, well, what do I like more? Just be like, oh, this, I'm out of here. I don't want to be burned alive. There's a couple easy answers. If there was like a really high-end six scale toy, that was like a legit piece of art, that might be something. But if there was something that contained a bunch of stuff, that's the easiest answer I can give is like, Giant is basically a large robot that contains six. So that's an easy thing to grab. The Shellraiser contains an entire collection of things. Like that's an easy thing to grab. If someone were crazy and had like the Akiba Ranger car with the Akiba Rangers in it, like that's an easy thing to grab because that's a car with an entire... It's an enclosed collection that you can pick up in one hand and walk away with. Like that's to me, if it was an emergency and it was a feasible thing to try to save possessions and not just leave them to be burned to death, then the most amount I could pick up that was good in the least amount of hand space is kind of like part of the equation, I suppose. But And I would be more interested in trying to put the fire out, really.
Yeah.
Like, if it was feasible to put the fire out, I would definitely...
I have a fire extinguisher and decent knowledge of how to try and stop fires from spreading.
Yeah, you put them out.
Yeah. That's generally how you do it, I guess. So.
All right. Well, question number two. If you were to try kit bashing, what would you make? Fire extinguisher.
Those questions oddly align.
Yeah. Omegas, what would you kit bash?
I have already attempted kit bashing.
In this question, you haven't.
In this question, I haven't.
It says if you were to try.
But I have tried. And I've succeeded.
You sure?
Pretty sure.
That's going to make this a real difficult question to answer.
Indeed it is. No, the way my brain naturally works, every now and then a mole will come along going, you know, this would really work well as this character or whatnot. And I might do like a little quick coloring in on like the instructions when they were convenient and actually posted the line art instructions online.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's all photos and crap, and you know that takes effort. But one of the ones I always wanted to see was I've said on the podcast before my love of the Energon Sharktacon mold, and I saw a lot of parallels to a repaint I really liked from RID, which was Night Crews.
Oh. Yeah, I remember you were tweeting about this.
Mm-hmm. So that's the kit bash I did.
Well. In the reality of this question, this is the kit bash you would do.
The kit bash I would... Oh.
Spoiler alert! You did it. Yeah, that's the kind of thing I like to see. Like that, I'm always happy to hear names like Night Crews in kit bashing, because those are things that are probably never going to appear again in an official capacity. Like, Night Crews was already a weird name when it came up.
I just like the name.
It's spelled so weird.
Yeah.
And as
you know,
I was going to say, Night Crews was also a really good toy.
Oh, yeah. I love that figure. I like it because of that mold. It's a really good mold. I love how he just foregone the whole concept of arms in favor of huge weaponry.
Yeah, that was one of the great classic Battle for the Spark Beast Machine skets. Like him in Battle Unicorn and that shark.
Right, but I really
that
didn't
Cyber gel Shark? With... Oh, I think I ended up owning like three of those through the course of time. I had a little brother that liked it a whole lot and then broke one in half, and so then I got him one and me one.
Ah, yeah. And I just really ended up liking Night Crews because it's the only time that mold really got a color scheme that wasn't, I don't know, garish or random to me.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it took to Sharktacon really well.
Yeah, I mean, like the lines are also there to do that. That was the classic thing about Night Crews to me was the inverted line detailing.
Oh yeah,
like doing all that stuff up in light gray on black.
That's one of the things I meant about the color scheme, because that's something that the original version Spice Streak did too. But for some reason, this dark green plastic with bright red paint wash over it didn't look right.
Yeah.
But I don't know, it just seems a lot more natural to have that gray on black.
Mm-hmm. No, I dig it. All right, so you actually did yours.
Mm-hmm.
Technically means that your answer is the less interesting one because it already happened.
Mine exists, so there.
That's true. Aaron,
yes.
Have you kit bashed?
A very little bit.
Oh, look at all your fancy pants with your.
I've got a G2 Hurricane sitting here looking at me.
You're all so fancy. Well, if you were to try kit bashing, what would you make?
I think what I'm going to do if and when my Thundertron ever shows up. As I'm going to do some of the similar things that I've seen other people do of knocking the pin out of the mech tech and sanding down the gear so that his mech tech sword thing can become a sword thing and using the Gundam marker pen that I have to touch up some of the lines and punch that up. That's about the level I feel like I am competent of doing. The hurricane that I did at TFCon required a lot of other people doing work and getting things ready, and then still took me a whole lot longer than I would have ever liked to have spent in a class doing.
Yeah, that was a fun day trying to figure out where you were and then going, oh yeah, he's in that room.
Yeah, he's in that room. People looking over him, kind of silently shaking their heads as I'm like, ah, paint good.
Oh no.
Kept trying to tell me, no, the paint goes on the toy, not in your mouth.
It tastes funny. All right. I have an easy answer to this because I saw this kit bash and I want to try doing it sometime. Is you take Universe Inferno Grapple Hotspot, like that mold, then you transform it, but with its torso facing the other way around, and then you paint it to look like Ultra Magnus. We actually talked about this on the podcast.
Yeah.
And that custom was shared. I think that's a really cool custom idea, and it's one I'd kind of like to try doing sometime if I ever figure out how to do customs, because I think it works really well. Super easy answer. If I were ever to get into like scratch building and stuff, then I'd love to have a go at doing some animated stuff. But
I have to always give major kudos to the people that can look at this toy, and that toy, and be like, I'm going to take these parts, smash it on this one, paint it different, and then turn it into something entirely different.
I think that I still maintain Dax Nova Prime is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen that was actually made from existing toys.
Yes.
That is a great example. A fantastic example of scratch building, or at least Frankenstein scratch building. Like it looks amazing.
Yeah.
It actually lives very close to where I am right now. But it's hard to break into Duncan's house.
Well, you're not trying hard enough.
Well, whenever I do, you know, I just get sidetracked by Duncan. I end up just staring at him while he's sleeping. He's so cute. Minute Magnus goes on to say, thanks for answering, and I really appreciate you guys putting out the show. I look forward to every episode, and I look forward to this question appearing in 2013. Boom, son! It's in 2012!
This episode hasn't been released yet.
That's true. I'm sure this will be out before 2013. There we go. I'm putting the gun to my own foot. Anyway, we're going to do one more listener question, because we're on a roll. This listener question comes from Titan Diego 2 on YouTube. Who says, hello, even team. He didn't even want to talk to... He specifically wants to talk to the even team. Look at that. Aren't you guys happy? He says, I, the Titan Diego 2, came back to you with a second listener question, but if you have not answered my first question, then clearly this is a strange world where we live in, and these are the hands we're given. That's for the 10 people that will get that lol. So on to the questions itself. First question, a Transformers Prime question. By the way, TJ, I miss you in primetime. Look at that.
Aww. I miss primetime too.
If you code choose a Transformers character to appear in TF Prime so they can appear in one episode and get killed in the same episode, one will you choose? TJ, you go first because he named you.
So it's a character that has to appear once and then immediately get killed.
Yep. It's not hard to do in Prime.
No, not at all. We already had a character do that. There's a real mean part of me that wants to pick characters I really, really hate.
That's the easy way. You got to go for effectiveness.
Yeah, effectiveness. Yeah.
Do you need a moment?
See, that's the hard part. I want to name something, but I don't want to just go to, like, my stock answers.
Give us a stock answer. You can do it.
Stock answer?
I already have a stock answer ready to go.
To throw back to a previous listener question, it's going to be Trailbreaker. That old, you know, that grizzled veteran, he can put up a force field and make that one heroic stand as he defends his friends one last time, and then, bam.
That is perfect, though, because, I mean, you have him show up, you have him complain about ads, all you can do is put up force fields, and he, like, makes some kind of ultimate sacrifice, like putting up a force field to contain an exploding reactor, and unfortunately he has to be inside the force field when it happens. You have this awesome, like, Spock kind of moment of, like, him at the force field and everyone standing right in front of him going, like, no, Trailer, he's like, don't worry, I will always be your friend. And he gets vaporized. Because that's what happened to Spock.
So does this mean they have to go to a planet to find him as a protoform?
I don't know what that movie is. What are you talking about?
There's other Star Trek movies after that one.
I'm going to leave that open to the listenership to comment about in the thread. Aaron, what about you?
I'd like to see some Wrecker action, especially some of the, like, Rack and Ruin showing up would be a crazy nod thing that would be completely weird.
If they showed up, it would be so predictable that they would get killed, like, immediately.
Yeah. There's a long time through everything. I mean, I think they're still around in Regeneration 1.
It's just that they to me, like, for them to show up outside of the comic continuity, they feel like guys that you put in as a nod, but also as a, who can we kill immediately?
Yeah.
That'd be like if Rung showed up.
Yeah.
Like if Rung showed up.
They couldn't even kill him.
Yeah, but if he showed up outside of the comics, like, that would be such a, well, that's really cool, but I know you're about to murder him as well.
Like, so you're saying, like, a Springer then out of the Wreckers is what you would need, because then it would come as a shock that he gets killed, not as a... Because who else would be good out of that? Either the Top Spin Twin Twist, those would be pretty obvious as Dead Men Walking. It'd have to be Springer out of... Except for maybe Ultra Magnus, who's kind of on and off as a Wrecker affiliate.
Well, he's already showed. That'll be weird if he shows up in Prime with, like, 15 toys to his name and he gets cliff jumpered. Like, that would be...
Yeah.
Alright, well, my answer's a real quick one. Star Saber. You'd never expect Star Saber to get killed off in the episode he appears in. And it would also so hardcore troll everybody.
Where did my stock answer bin go?
Like, who would be happy to see Star Saber show up and get killed in one episode? In prime time alone, I am sure at least Jeremy would be really angry.
I might come back just to rage on that too.
If I wanted to troll the entire fandom, I would put Star Saber in a Transformers cartoon and kill him off in the same episode. That is the most, to have him finally show up again in American Fiction and die immediately would be possibly the biggest trolling on a mass level of the adult fandom that Transformers could do. So that's my motivation for this answer. Give him a new character model and everything. Never released a toy, though. Put him in the same realm as the animated Constructicons. Of like, yeah, we'll release him next wave. Oh, wait, we've had to push him. Oh, wait, he's... Oh, the line's over. Sorry.
Yeah.
Titan Diego actually also had his own answer, which was Skywarp, so he could enter happily into the warship and say hi to Megatron and get shot in the head by accident by Megatron for confusing him for Starscream, which would be pretty funny. Again, we're going to reference Arms Micron, bring in Arms Micron, Thundercracker, and Skywarp, and then everyone thinks they're Starscream and they get killed immediately. Blam. I already thought that's what they were going to do in that one episode anyway. Anyway, Titan Diego's second question. If you were allowed to create a now wave of TF toys, what storyline, characters, aesthetics, and gimmick will you use? I want to see Energon in movie aesthetics using Power Core. Wait, no, that would be horrible. Personally, I just want good Minicon gimmicks and Power Core limes. So, Aaron, what would you do?
So, a toy wave... And what gimmicks and aesthetics?
Pretty much, yeah.
The gist of it.
You're in charge of a new wave and every aspect of it.
Oh. I think another wave of just general classics of 84 toys. And just, again, you know, the gimmick that I prefer is a good, solid transformation. Just have maybe... each of them has kind of a signature move type of thing as they transform and being good and poseable. I'm not one for gimmicks. We know this.
The way to make that answer interesting is that the signature move they do while they transform is like at a Street Fighter or something. It's like one of them has to do a Shoryuken to finish transforming.
No, I mean like the waist twist type of thing.
The waist on the toy twists when he transforms.
You know what I mean, darn.
Calm down.
I know, crazy talk. Just, I feel that transformation works well as the gimmick and not having to put a little wart on the top of it or have a power core connectors hidden somewhere or something like that.
All right.
I'm boring, I know.
So Aaron took the easy answer. Omegas, now you have to come up with something that's not the easy answer.
It's not the easy answer. Since he appeared in that episode, we have to put Trailbreaker in the wave.
Mm-hmm.
God, there's part of me that wants to troll and just say, okay, we're releasing all the best toys from the Prime line again, but they're all repainted into Bumblebee.
The Hive.
The Hive, yeah.
Sorry, Transformers The Hive.
Yeah, I don't, you know, that day is not too far off. It's Bumblebee versus Wasps.
The Hive, with the Bumblebee bots versus the Waspinator cons. There you go, I fixed it.
That's actually, yeah, actually that's one of the things that I would like to see. Now that we officially have beasts in Prime, you know, I'd like to include a wave that actually did have some, you know, some of the Beast Wars characters coming back. Now, you know, as long as the fiction can now allow for that type of alt mode to happen. As for the gimmick, I'm still a big fan of Cybertron's Cyber Key gimmick, giving you something collective. What?
Huh? What?
What? I heard disdain.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Aaron,
I'm answering now. You just sit over there and mind your own business.
You should put some more of that Kona in your Kona.
Yeah.
Play with a Lego set.
No.
No, I was still a fan of the Cyber Key gimmick for giving you something collectible and a gimmick that generally was out of the way. It didn't hamper the toy. So you could get away with that in the Prime line if it's not a key. It's a Dark Energon shard. Where you could have different things just like Energon flames erupting out and weapons unlocking that fire Dark Energon missiles.
Mm-hmm.
A whole wave where you could corrupt your Autobots to evil.
That actually gives me an interesting idea for a permutation on what I want to do, which is mostly an aesthetic or gimmick thing. I want a lot of Transformers where, this is kind of abstract, but I want the transformations to all involve, like, at some point, like, their face is, like, their head flips up, but it's, like, I want all the heads to be in, like, multiple pieces that all kind of look like they're exploded outwards and sucked together to form the head, like something super dynamic. Or like a bunch of interlinked automorphs that are all like, not boring, but like, I think one of the coolest automorphs before automorph was a thing was Voyager Animated Prime's gimmick where you hit the switch and his legs like go cycloning down and lock into place. And like every single step has something like that. So it's like transforming the toy is like a huge anime event. And like the box, the insert in the box is like anime lines, like speed lines, and I want them to all transform super dynamically. Another good example of what I mean is like Prid Rumble's head reveal, where it's like you're pulling the entire chest open just so his head springs up. Like I want overt over engineered things that don't accomplish as much as they're engineered to do. So it's like all these joints all to move out of the way just so that like one finger comes out of his hand and it all compresses back together again. Like redundant transformation parts. I want that.
So the toy equivalent of a Rube Goldberg machine.
Dynamic formers. Anime speed lines everywhere. That's my line. I don't know who'd be in it. I'm sure Optimus Prime would be in it somewhere. Otherwise it won't sell. Anyway... Titan Diego 2 goes on to say, Thayard! I know that's bad English. Questione. This is not really a question. I just want to hear each one of you go in a rant about what you don't like or hate in Transformers, like the Unicron Trilogy. I refuse. Aaron.
Overbearing gimmicks. It's kind of the line that I had before, and then there's also my normal soapbox that I'll just say my soapbox.
That's...
You know, I know, we know what we're talking about here.
That's a real rant you just did there. That took up a whole 30 seconds.
Yeah. Well, I don't need to get all fired up.
You already ruined the last time we tried to talk about it, but it's going like, hey, so I heard this, this, and this.
Yeah. Also got this black blood going, which apparently makes me horribly profane.
Mm-hmm.
I say horribly. What I do on the podcast is pretty clean for normal construction
you
life.
You swore once in an hour and a half. That's yeah. Terrible. That's all right. Omegas.
I'm not sure why I have to answer. Like I do this thing on YouTube where I complain about the toys I don't like.
What's something we haven't heard yet?
That's
what I'm trying to think of right now.
My personal vendetta against modern shell forming.
There you go.
Because there was a time when I completely gave up on movies like and I'm probably bailing out of the Transformers 4 at this point because I have this enormous problem, and it was actually repeated in one of the toys for what we got this week. So I'll be going a second round on this, where the designers got really, well, how can I say this? One of the reasons I like the Cybertron line so much is because it is very, very solid. There are very few panels hanging off of limbs. There's a lot more usage of the vehicle to create the bulk of the robot. And the designers for the movie, because of the complex design, got into this habit of hiding parts underneath panels. So it wasn't so much about transforming the car anymore so much as it was stripping it away and unfolding the robot, which doesn't feel like a Transformer to me. You know, I want to be able to see and experience the vehicle that they were while they're still in the robot mode. I want to be able to see where they came from. You know, transformation like, well, say, Animated Lockdown, for instance. It does an amazing job, but it's, you know, of converting this car into a robot that you don't see the car. But in a way, you kind of do, because the parts and the bulk from it are still there. It's not hidden. It's not hanging off in bits and panels on, you know, or tucked away into, like, this big backpack. It's all there.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that got really annoying for me during Dark of the Moon, where the toys became pointlessly complicated because they were stuck in that design aesthetic. And, well, not Dark of the Moon. Revenge of the Fallen was worse.
You should get Dark of the Moon, Voyager Sentinel Prime.
I have him.
Yeah.
He's not the best.
I will say he's really good at what he does, given that what he does isn't too interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's a really effective shell former because he really embraces it. It's like, yeah, everything's going to fold away. It's all folding up back here. Everything. You will not see any of it.
But at least he kind of had the excuse of a cape.
That's why I think he's such an amusing toy. Because he's just got this titanic cape on.
I know, so I guess that is my rant. I'm against any toy that requires panels with 5-6 interlocking tabs just to get one piece in place. I miss toys where you move them there and they stay there. No tabs.
If I was going to have a rant on something that I haven't hardcore ranted on before, because I've been trying to think of something, because I'm not talking about Unicron Trilogy, I've done that like 15 times. It'd probably be, this is a little bit outside Transformers, but I do find it interesting, but I also think it's kind of a bummer just how the mass sense of entitlement so quickly has just devoured a lot of third-party Transformer conversation. Even more so because these are third parties that are looking directly at, you know, the fandom to sell stuff, and how kind of ungrateful the tone of conversation's gotten. It's a really weird word to use, because, I mean, it's not like we need to be grateful either. but just how middling and how needlepoint, like, anal in terms of nitpicking talk about third party toys can be. And it's not even just that people want specific details, it's like the way that people will just rag the nuts off something because it's like the panel line on the hip skirt is facing 10 degrees too far to the left, and it's like, you know, once upon a time it was like, wow, someone's making an Ultra Magnus trailer that turns into armor. Oh man, they're making Constructicons, all six of them, and they combine. And that was specifically where most of it happened. It's just like that mega thread. It all turned around in its head and became like, I can't believe how crappy a toy Neckbreaker is because his shovel blade is black. That's just disgusting. I should sell the entire set. And it's like, you know, I find that candor and that particular tone of discussion, especially just where it all started and how quickly it turned into just another fandom talking about stuff they want, and it seemed to lose focus on the nature of where it was coming from. And I thought that was just a real bummer. It certainly isn't like 100% that is third party discussion, but it shows up so often now. Or, you know, I can't believe this toy is $80. I could go to Hasbro Deluxe for $20. And it's like just the lack of perspective whatsoever.
We get that with Masterpieces as well. I mean, I'm sitting here looking at Masterpiece Sideswipe, and yes, he is the size of some $20 toys. However, he's not the technology or the paint or the licensing thereof. I think that we've had a big influx of people that may be minors, and you can't tell age on the internet very well. Sort of the way they react to things.
I'm not even going to say age enters into it so much as just like, you know, it's fine if you just don't know. I mean, that's going to happen. But and that's why I'm not going to say, like, you know, I am mad at everyone who does it. It's more of just a generalization, and it's aimed mostly at the collective gestalt attitude of just like that kind of stuff of, like, you know, in a word, the entitlement that has not just about Transformers, but more so about third-party stuff, where I felt the entitlement really wasn't there for a little while, where it was really just this constant sense of, like, I can't believe this is being done, or this is such a cool idea, and it was more about the idea and the execution. And it certainly isn't just in the collectors. I mean, a lot of third parties, too, have had to become a lot more company-like, because they're getting so much more traffic that they both can afford to and need to survive. But it's just sometimes I'll always end up reading a reply where I just sit there going, like, man, I can't believe how... And it's a bad word to use, but I just sit there going, like, that just seems so ungrateful, the way that the tone of this reaction is. And it's a bummer. Like, I don't go out of my... I don't try to make people feel bad. I don't, like, start replying and go, like, you're all ungrateful! Because it's like, that's not going to accomplish anything. But that is a thing, just, like, I sit there on my end of the computer where I'm not typing the replies, just going, like, man, that's a bummer to read, and kind of just move on. But...
I think that's just the nature of how it goes when you've got a market that targets directly to collectors' needs and desires, especially when they're more connected to the community. Because it works the same. It works the other way too. You got a lot of people that bash on Hasbro products because they're not as good as third party. Well,
and I also never, like, that is such a two-way road, because it's like you'll have some folks who say, you know, I can't believe Hasbro stuff isn't as good as third party, and then. I'm not going to say it's the same people, but sometimes you'll have folks who then at the same time go, like, I can't believe third-party toys are so expensive. And it's like everyone just wanting the best of both worlds condense into one thing. And it's like, that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the world where all the good parts of everything are condensed into one item is not the world we live in.
Mm-hmm.
In any way, shape, or form.
I was going to say, I miss the day when we could enjoy the toys for what they do right instead of harping on what they do wrong, but I'm trying to remember when that day existed.
No, I mean, I think in third party, to a degree, there was a moment like that in third party. Certainly not like a full year or anything, but there was a moment when that stuff got really mainstream with the City Commander armor, where it was kind of like this overall sense of, like, this is kind of neat. This is cool. Where is this going to go? And, you know, I'm certainly not going to say that that's the kind of tone that should have remained, because that's asking for way too much on a social level. But I don't know. It's, every now and then, that's really the thing that sometimes gets to me is the tone. And on Hasbro stuff as well, but on Hasbro stuff, I think that tone's been around for so long that I got used to it. And I'm sure if third-party Transformers-related items continue to be a thing for another 5 or 10 years, like, I'll just get used to it as well. But I think it's because it's still so fresh to me. Like, the surge of popularity in that stuff is still so new, because it's only from back in 08. And to me, that's still kind of new. Because that's when we started doing the podcast. And this is still a new thing that we're doing.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll say again, though, you know, I'm not trying to harsh anyone's mellow. I'm not trying to dictate what people should say, because it's not any one thing one person said. It's, as I said, it's the ominous cloud of the collective voice that I'm looking at when I say that stuff. And there's nothing any one person can do about it. So don't fret it. I mean, I have said things about third parties that, you know, that are negative as well. Certainly not trying to say you can only like third party stuff. I have a big problem with the, you know, it sucks this became a problem for me, but it's not a little rant. I've talked about this before. I'm kind of tired of the third party silhouette reveal, because nowadays it's like, you've got to show a physical item, or can you just, like, not tell us about it until you have a physical item? Because, I mean, silhouettes, there's nothing wrong with silhouettes. It's just that it's becoming kind of a joke of, like, there's a new third party, you never heard of them before, and they've got a silhouette of what they're working on. And it's like,
they've got the silhouettiest silhouette.
It's like, so when are we going to hear about this? In a month, in 8 months, in 2 years? I mean, especially it's the new third party debuting with a silhouette specifically is a situation that I'm like, come on, guys. Be the ones to take it forward a step. Just work on what you're working on and then show us the physical. I mean, if you have the silhouette, surely you're far along enough. It's only going to take another, like, month or three. And you'll have a far more dynamic reveal. Also, I mean, like, you know, the classic parallel to this is, you know, look at what just happened with the group G1 Uppers. It's like, they show up. We're going to make an animated Stunticon trailer. It's all right. You hear almost nothing for ages. Then they show up again. We're making a Masterpiece Grimlock head. All right. We're done. We're actually splitting up and doing our own things. We're going to release all this stuff independently. Like, okay, well, if you never said you were G1 Uppers, then we would have just seen you as new people on the scene in the first place. And I don't know. I mean, that's a very hindsight thing. But I think the thing to learn from that is, like, you know, if you're new and you show up and the first thing you're going to show is just, like, a silhouette, it's not going to get a lot of people going anymore, I think. And that's why I really liked what Unique Toys did with the Beasticons, where they showed up, as far as I know, they showed up with a picture of some gray prototype stuff. And it's like, there you go, now people are able to actually have a discussion about it. As opposed to, what shape does that look like? There, I attempted to rant. I'm not very good at it. So please leave some feedback on whether or not, you know, my ranting was up to par. And, you know, we'll have a go at this again. We'll, you know, once that Superlink supplemental comes out, then we'll be all ready and set to go. Anyway, we're going to take a break. Then we're going to be back with some What We Got This Week. This is episode 230 of WTFTFW, and I'm going to go and do some more Coke. It's time, ladies and gentlemen, to talk about the purchase of objects in the last 7 or 14 days that are of relevant note to our interests. We're going to start off by talking to Aaron about Transformers he might have gotten this week that he may have alluded to 15 times over the last 2.5 podcasts.
So, Mr. Gog Dog came to my humble abode.
What?
Yeah. Well, maybe not humble, but came to my house and had picked up a Prime Ultra Magnus for me. And that is the extent of what I got this week. There you go.
So what do you think of Prime Ultra Magnus?
Super loose shoulder ball joints with the weird, awkward, like, mid-body hinge piece. Conceptually, he's pretty good, but there's just so much that doesn't quite come together.
Aw.
And that makes me kind of sad. I don't know about sad, just disappointed. I mean,
tearful, he can't, sobbing.
He can't hold his own mech tech weapon worth a darn, or powerizer weapon, because his shoulder, both of his shoulders are so loose and floppy. It's a good weapon. It's finally a good one. It locks in place. It has a color-appropriate LED. They didn't put a red LED in here to go through blue. It has the tab so that you can lock it in place. And even when it's not a hammer, it looks like a decent, like, battle rifle-looking thing. They almost got it right, and then they gave him shoulders that can't hold it.
That's a bummer.
But very good. Like I had said before, I was thinking about getting the Takara version, but money and finances, and this is about the same, so.
Mm-hmm.
Until I see reports that, no, the shoulders on that are so stiff that you gotta, like, lean into it to, and it holds that pose forever. But for all the lead up and teasing, I'm not terribly excited. It's not a great reveal.
I'm not sure what it is about that toy, but I remember hearing a lot of reports about that for the Cyberverse version too. Even mine's a little weak in the shoulders.
Yeah, but at least in a Cyberverse, if it's not super firm, it's not a big surprise because it's a Cyberverse. It's a,
yeah.
It's a little toy, not a $22 to $30. Toy that just, especially for having signature weapon ideas and everything, you know, having that, only having one shoulder rocket, if you're going to include this little thing, you know, would it be that much harder to have a second one so that you can be like, hey, look, he's got his Ultra Magnus shoulder missiles. Oh, no, wait, he doesn't. He has a shoulder missile. It's just a case where good intentions, again, seem to have fallen short due to a bottom line that almost seems artificially placed. But hey, any questions about the toy? I don't know. I'm underwhelmed with Ultra Magnus, and I've tried filling with him to try and be like, okay, what am I not seeing here? And
have you considered doing any of the shoulder tightening things? Like, from what I've heard, even though they're loose, it's like they're also super easy to tighten with the usual suspects of modification.
Yeah, I'd again need to get some of your magical future floor polish to try that up. I've in the past had limited success with both super glue and clear fingernail polish, but I just need to jump into it and do that. Maybe that'll be the custom that I do.
Putting floor polish in Ultra Magnus's shoulders?
Make Ultra Magnus not suck so much.
Because, I mean, as far as I understand, like, even the whole thing of putting a bit of tissue paper in there has helped to some degree.
I don't know. And then it's the other things, like his backpack feels like it should have a different hinge in it to let it fold down more. Mm-hmm. Yet it won't. There's a lot of disappointment in different levels on this thing. And it just seems like it should have just another notch. And then he wouldn't have this big blocky thing behind his head and have more shoulder, get more shoulder movement out of that weird middle torso cut.
See, this is the weird thing. Where I'm most likely, if I see him in Canada, he's going to be like just over $30 after tax. And I kind of want to get the toy, but I'm like, this is all just pushing me even more so to look at the Arms Micron one, because at least he comes with a cool Minicon that turns into a hammer.
Yeah.
And it's as neat as his mech tech weapon sounds, like, aside from the fact his mech tech weapon locks, do you think it's a pretty good hammer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do like the fact that the LED comes out of the hammer to give it an impression that it's actually doing something other than just being a big bludgeoning device.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it looks like a weapon in both modes, and it has a second handle up by the hammerhead, so you can, with the weird shoulder cut things, you can get him to have one hand low on the hammer and one hand up on that handle to make it almost look like he's going to do a two-handed, like, sledgehammer swing with it.
Yeah.
So there's possibilities that just, man, with as wobbly as the shoulders are out of the box, the fact that he has a whole lot of detailing without a whole lot of paint, it's just, especially at a Canadian price or a UK price, it would be really hard to justify the purchase for me.
Okay.
It seems like we're getting, at least Ultra Magna seems like he got deep into the cost savings territory over the what we'd really want type of thing.
So he got short-sticked.
Yep.
That's a bummer. I think it still looks like an interesting toy. And I mean, once his shoulders are not loose, it sounds like he's serviceable. But if I'm going to go for that figure, it sounds like I'd rather go for, as cool as that mech tech weapon sounds, I probably would get more out of the Arms Micron.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I'm undecided. Aside from that, did you Transformer it up at all in any other ways?
Nope.
Oh, dear.
Nope. Looked around and tried, but right now, locally at least, everything seems to be older waves. Toys R Us keeps restocking with a wave back of the Prime RID line. And, I mean, they've had plenty of first edition stuff come and go and come and go and come and go. I've seen first edition bulkheads and Primes like crazy. However, I've had both of those toys, so I don't get terribly excited.
Hmm.
But
all right.
That's been the gist of it. Even went out today hoping to see that that stuff getting released and didn't show up.
Apparently, I could go to the comic shops around here and find Fall of Cybertron Wave 3, like Kickback and Starscream.
Well, why don't you?
Number one, I didn't have time to go out. But number two, it's comic shops. They'd be more like $20.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about doing it for Kickback or Starscream, but I was like, maybe I'll wait a little bit just until later this month when I'm not having a lot of financial responsibilities chilling out on my shoulders being unanswered.
Yeah. Another reason why there wasn't a whole lot.
Yep. Well, Merry effing Christmas. Omegas, what about you? Did you Transformer it this week?
Indeed I did.
Well, tell us about it.
Well, thanks to my friend Brian, who secured many of these in the past for me, I have added more to my GDO Generations collection.
Mm-hmm.
Starting with the laser beak for the Scouts. He's one of those toys where I honestly wish I had space on my shelves to leave him in vehicle mode.
Mm-hmm.
It is a beautiful toy. I really dig the repaint. It's such a random idea to repaint him into Laserbeak. And in robot mode, he doesn't feel all that different from the original version of the toy.
Yeah. But
that deco in the... The paint job in vehicle mode just sells it so well.
I was going to ask you what you thought of that, because that, to me, is the reason to get that toy.
The toy should have been packed in that mode. It looks fantastic. Like, even aside from the G1 cassette homage, which actually works really well as the deco on a jet.
Mm-hmm.
Then he's got the unofficial Gerwalk mode, so you can kind of fan mode in some type of bird.
Mm-hmm.
No, but he's a very cool toy, and adding to my what I've noticed is my collection of gray, silver, and red GDO toys.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that.
They really like those colors, I guess. One step up, moving to the larger sizes, we have Swerve. Really happy to see actually got released, since that was one of those toys we got in the instructions first.
Yeah.
And no one could figure out who the hell he was supposed to be at first.
I still question whether he really is much of a Swerve so much as a cool-looking Autobot who is red.
Well, Swerve is, for some reason, that name they tack on to any red and black Autobot repaint they want to do.
Yeah.
But at least this one is a lot closer to the original Swerve. It's usually put on any random sports car that they want to repaint. At least this one is a truck, so I can buy it as a classic style Swerve. It's the cup mold, so it's still a nice mold, still works really well. He's got those panels on his arms that take too many tabs to get into place, but besides that,
there's a trick to it. I only recently actually got it, but I was futzing with him and Cup, and I kind of caught on to the trick, but it's hard to describe.
Oh well, the mold still really holds up. It surprises me that GDO has now given us upgrades of two of the Season 3 mini-bots. Meanwhile, I don't think we've had a G1 Brawn come out of any type.
No, not outside of the Legends.
Yeah. I find it odd that there's a lot of those old, better remembered mini-bots getting left out in the cold, where all these others have gotten these really nice upgrades and upsizes.
I'm not complaining. But I also don't have much love for Brawn outside of my big weird theory.
See, this is what makes me sad that GDO Brawn didn't come out, because it looks like he was leaning toward your theory of that size.
Yeah, well, I mean, GDO Brawn I mostly like because he looked like a really stupid toy. And I the way that the aesthetics did not whatsoever play together really excited me. But also, after Cliffjumper was actually physically available, it made me more interested in how Brawn would turn out, because it looks like that Photoshop job might not have been indicative of the physical product. And now I really want to know how that Brawn would have turned out. So he's kind of on my long-term, I hope it becomes attainable sometime, list.
I'm hoping GDO is successful enough to make it round two. I really do want the other remolds we were supposed to get for Generations.
Yeah.
But staying with that theme, up one size again, I have Hotspot.
Everyone has Hotspot, except for me.
Everyone. It's special to me because Hotspot's one of those toys that survived my childhood. Like, I still have my G1 Hotspot. And still love that figure. And, it's the Inferno mold. It's still a really nice, really solid mold. One of my favorites that came out in that line. As evidenced by owning it four times over now. But, it works for him. Looks really good. I am missing the white and red caution stripes. But he still has that little fireball decal on the side. That makes me happy. And the new head sculpt is actually really nice.
Hey,
it's very...
Oh, go ahead.
Hang on. He manages to not look like Optimus Prime, which is really easy to do with that head style.
Yeah, I was going to say, aside from the head... Like, the head sculpt on all the new GDO heads generally are super effective. But in his case, like, he really brings out that that identity very strongly. And I'm also really sure that the white that is kind of missing from his body is going to be a reprolabelable thing sooner than later. Because I know a lot of folks are chomping at the bit for some GDO stickerage.
I'm sure that's in the works.
Mm-hmm.
Seems that one seems obvious. I want to figure out how they would actually get his red chest on there, because that's the one detail he's missing.
Oh, I saw a really great idea. Forgot where. But you do that thing of inverting his, like, using the back of his chest as the front of the chest, and then paint that black plate red. And then, even if possible, add some extensions to either side of it so it covers up his shoulder joints. And that could totally work.
Not a bad idea, no. Or kid bashing.
Mm-hmm.
No, unfortunately, that might be the end of my GDO experience, because the rest of them aren't quite doing it for me.
I've looked at the scouts I haven't bought several times. Sandstorm and Dead End.
Sandstorm, Dead End, yeah.
And Brawl,
too.
I bought Brawl. I almost bought Dead End a couple times, but I'm sitting there going, like, I don't know if I care for this toy as Dead End. I'm not really sure yet, because I liked it as Breakdown. But I don't know if I care for it as Dead End. And Sandstorm, I'm just like, I just don't like the toy he's based on very much.
No, to be fair, it's not really Dead End. It's Wild Rider.
It's right, Wild Rider.
Why I love that homage. Yeah. They just had to give him that old name.
Yeah.
But I don't know what it is. Like, they're not bad decos. I mean, they're clever repaints. Like, you know, I said it was Springer. They look like the type of thing BotCon would come up with, except they're at retail.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just tired of a lot of those molds.
If they weren't $8 to $9, I would buy Sandstorm and Dead End. But
that is a rough thing that, for whatever reason, they've decided to continue the price float on toys that were originally, you know, this is the third or fourth painting of them. You'd think it'd be able to keep it out lower.
Yeah, because, I mean, Laserbeak and Brawl, I was fine with painting that because I like those toys a lot. And I like the decos on them. And the other two, it's like, even Sandstorm, if he was like more like $5 or $6, I would probably just pick him up. And I'm sure eventually they may go on sale if Toys R Us ever, you know, gets back to doing that stuff with Transformers again. I mean, outside of like the Black Friday stuff. So if they ever go down, I'm sure I'll end up picking them up so I can, you know, check off that achievement on my achievement list of got all the GDO scouts. But for now, I just keep looking at them. I'm like, man, I would rather spend this money on, like, Ninja Turtles. And so I did. And I got Metalhead.
Well, the GDOs from Brian were the only things I got this week. So, yeah, I'm done.
All right. Only on-topic thing I got this week was something I think is super cool. I'm not going to tell people that they should think it's super cool, but I think people should give it a look if they passed over it. Cherry Bomb Toys is a shop I used to visit now and then when I was in BC, because they were in the same town I was in, and there's some really cool people there. They started selling something that I think is really cool, and so I thought there were only two colors, and then I ordered both, and then I found out there were three, and the Cherry Bomb dudes were super cool about, you know, updating the order so I'd get all three. But they made a cape that is primarily designed to go with the Nightmorpher Commander and its repaints, the Annihilator and the Shattered Glass Commander. The cape is made from bamboo, handmade, with a hand-stamped insignia on the back. It's got a little hole cut. The way it mounts is basically you pop the figure's head off and slide this over the stem of the ball joint and put the head back on. And then you can open up the front chest compartment and tuck some of the cape in there and then reclose it. Let me just grab my dude. I've got one of them on right now, the dark blue cape that goes with the Nightmorpher Commander, and this dark blue totally matches the dark blue of his legs and his head. There's a couple cool things about this. Number one, it is a cloth cape for a Transformer. You have to kind of be into that idea, for one.
So it's almost a poncho?
It's not. That's the best part. This is a full-on goddamn regal cape. That's what I love about this. So because it's made from, like, bamboo and not from felt, it hangs really naturally. So it's not got the problem some toy capes have of just being, like, a piece of felt that kind of flops around on their back that's always kind of stuck in a static shape. It's not heavy, but it hangs super natural. It gets a lot of really natural creases when it hangs down the back. And the way it's cut is kind of unique. I don't know how to describe this, but it's, you know how royal, like, king capes are kind of cut round on the bottom so they hang in a certain way?
Mm-hmm.
It's cut like that, and then on the two tips, it's got longer extended parts that can kind of flow forwards. So it's cut like a specifically cut kind of regal cape. And it hangs so naturally that it looks really cool. If this thing did not hang this well and did not have such a nice cut, I would have been kind of lukewarm on it. It's the way it hangs and the way it's cut and how, like, if you kind of just have it hang, like, you put the cape on the guy and you kind of pull it all back so his arms and shoulders are not covered, it forms this really thick, like, dense-looking cape, and it drags just slightly on the ground, just enough to look kind of not like it's too long for the toy, but like it's intentionally kind of dragging behind him a little bit. It is a fantastically done accessory. It's like $13. In my opinion, if you like the idea of a cape on a toy, this is entirely worth it. There's three different colors, and because it mounts using a ball joint socket, basically slipping over top of a ball joint, and the bamboo is a somewhat flexible, slightly stretchable material, you can use this with anything that has a ball jointed anything that you can slide the cape through. One thing I'm going to be trying is I got the black, because also you can flip the cape around so that the insignia is on the inside, so if you don't want the insignia showing, that's how you do that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be trying something with the black cape that's got the green insignia for the Shattered Glass Commander, because I don't have that one. And I'm going to see if I can get that to work as a decent cape for my Figure Arts Kamen Rider Eternal. Because Kamen Rider Eternal is kind of iconicized by his cape, and the Figure Arts version has no good capes. There are two different cape options, and I don't like either of them. So I want to see if I can get this to work as a really cool cape for him. Other Transformers this can work on is, like, anyone who has a ball-jointed head. Cherry Bomb took some photos of this on the United or Reveal the Shield G2 Laser Prime. Of course, this can also work most likely on any Lockdown. I'm going to be trying that out sometime soon. I mostly want to put it on a Night Morpher to see how it looked. And it has, like, revitalized the Night Morpher Commander for me. Because he looks a lot different in a kind of cool way when he actually has a cape on, because it brings out the knightly side of him, and in terms of his silhouette, it really helps even out the slightly long shoulder pads that this design has. If you look at Cherry Bomb's pictures, they've also shown, like, on the red cape for the Annihilator, they cut a slit, or a pair of slits in, so you could slide his sword into the cape as kind of a sheath. Because they are cloth, that is entirely doable, and because they are, like, $13, which I don't think is that expensive for what you're getting, it's not, like, unfeasible to get, like, an extra one and start messing with it or cutting different stuff into it so it can fit differently. Like, the cape can actually drape over top of the, quote-unquote, smokestacks on the shoulders, and I was wondering if cutting small holes in there so the smokestacks can poke through the cape would look kind of interesting. It's a really well-done cape accessory, and I think cape accessories are difficult to do well, especially on smaller toys. So yeah. I am like legit impressed, because Cherry Bomb's photos made it look like a huge heavy piece of cloth just kind of hanging off the back of the toy, and it didn't really catch me. But I was like, number one, I wanted to support Cherry Bomb, and number two, I kind of wanted to see if there was something more to this, and I think there is something more to this. So I am kind of legit impressed and legit surprised. The logo is also kind of cool. It's kind of a mixture of the Autobot logo inside a cog, and it is, like, you know, like they say, it is hand stamped, so it's got a little bit of wear to it, but in a slightly intentional looking way. The way the capes are packaged, they're folded up into a Ziploc bag with a logo card and an instruction sheet. That's actually pretty helpful. The instruction sheet mentions that because of the way they're packed, there's going to be creases. It tells you how to get the creases out, which is, like, drape the cape over something for a little while, or if you need to get them out right now, expose it to some hot air, like, put it into a dryer for, like, 30 seconds, which means these capes are machine washable, technically. I don't know. I really like this cape. I didn't think I was going to be as excited about it as I was, and I ended up, like, playing with Night Morpher Commander for, like, 20 minutes straight, just, like, posing the cape on him. If there was a way that they could stitch a wire into the bottom of this cape, I would say it's a categorically perfect accessory. As it is, it's still pretty good. It just doesn't have any way of being airborne without the use of, like, little stands or something hidden behind the figure. But I really like it, and the main thing I want to figure out is how this cape could look with other toys, Because I think that on the Night Morpher, it looks fantastic. But if this can look really good on other figures as well, I think that they're, that this will be a much more recommendable accessory. Because a good cloth cape for a 6 to 10 inch figure is kind of rare, I think. Specifically, like for like Figure Arts or Nika scale figures, this could be a really good add-on for dudes who might be lacking otherwise. Like Omegas, like when I say Kamen Rider Eternal, you know what I'm talking about, right? Like I forgot if you have that figure art, but
actually no, I don't have the figure art, but I do know it came with the cape was fairly restrictive if I remember right.
It was, yeah, it's hard plastic, and pretty much limits him to standing. And then if you bought like the repaint of him, that came with another cape that was sculpted billowing behind him, but it was kind of like short. And it didn't get across the swirling cape that I was hoping it would get across. The only other cape on this scale I've seen done this well is on the Figma version of Kamen Rider Knight. Because that was a really well done cape as well, but that's on a Figma and you get an entire figure with it as well.
Yeah.
So
annoying and try and buy a cape and you have to deal with the figure that comes with it.
Yeah, damn it. Anyway, I know a lot of people pass this by. I'm going to do a video about it sometime soon as well, because I legit think more people need to give a look at this, because it's like I said, it's a cape for a robot, but as a cape, it is so surprisingly well done. I was just staring at it for a while. It really breathes new life into the Night Morpher Commander. It really brings out the night side in a way that could have been very poorly done, but there was some real clear thought that went into this cape, like right down to the way it was cut, and I'm super impressed. Also, it's like $13, so grats on them for keeping the cost as low down as they could.
Fabric plus anyway,
that's actually all I got this week. That's on topic was capes.
Piece of cloth, brilliant.
Well, bamboo, actually. Handmade, hand stamped. I don't know. I like it a lot. Let's move into off topic then. I only got one off topic thing. I got Cards Against Humanity expansion number 2.
Me too. Oh, expansion number 2. I thought you were going to
say. I still haven't got that other thing yet.
Oh.
Hasn't shown up yet. I paid $5 for it though. I will say. Yep.
What?
Well, that was the number that was in there. And I thought. So when I ordered the holiday pack, I didn't catch on that was where I would edit the number.
Yeah.
And then suddenly I'd already paid for it. And I was like, oh, all right. Well, whatever. $5.
Oh, so were you going to be one of the jerks and get it for free?
Hell yeah. No, I just wanted to know like how open source it was. Like if there's going to be a drop down list or something, but as I understand it, the thing that said $5 was something I could have edited.
Yeah.
So I did not catch on to that. So
they didn't
like, well,
make it terribly clear, but at the same time, $5 for 30 cards done the way that it was.
Yeah,
is not
I love what they did for people who paid zero, because that's
yeah,
that's almost
the one
worth
I saw
zero,
was they mailed
love
it
to keep
to
a
Hugh.
Mailing label that said that.
Yeah, well, the one that because I think that there were two or three different things that they went with, because the one that I saw was to Mr. Jassel, first name Hugh. Think about it.
It varies?
That's the one that I saw that somebody had said on Twitter or Facebook.
Yeah, I saw one that just literally said, like, huge space asshole.
Yeah.
So anyway, I got expansion number 2. And the cool thing was, when I ordered it through the Canadian site, the shipping options were $8 shipping, or it could tell I was from Toronto, so it said, or local pickup at Snakes and Lattes. And I was like, that's pretty friggin' cool. So I went and picked that up, and Snakes and Lattes dudes were really cool. They just needed to know the order number. And I just walked in, and I was like, yeah, I'm... Oh, Cards Against Humanity? Yeah. Here to pick it up? Yep. Expansion 1, 2. Number 2? Okay. Order number? Yeah, it's this. Okay, here you go. And then they went on to say, you should look into this other game, too, if you really like games that are about being horrible to people. Because this other game, I think it was called Inquiry. Apparently, in the rules, it says that you have to shake hands afterwards because it's just a game. And that's, like, written in the instructions. Because apparently that game, you are an utter bastard to your fellow players. But I haven't looked any deeper into it yet. But I got expansion number 2. It's more Cards Against Humanity. I dig it. The other thing I got off topic is actually shared with Aaron, because I just killed one of his dudes, is after last week's podcast, a bunch of us all got Hero Academy.
Yeah.
So I just murdered some of Aaron's guys while he was telling us about the Transformer that he got.
That the, what the phone shake was? Yeah. I've had poor draws on the game.
Oh, man. Okay, that's the thing I've noticed about Hero Academy. When you get poor draws, you're like, you are screwed if you get poor draws. That's the only part of the game. It's what makes it kind of fun, but it also is the part that I think that makes it slightly broken. Is if you get, I mean, that makes a lot of games broken, but in this one especially, because I don't know how it builds your quote-unquote deck. But if you get a poor draw in Hero Academy, you're screwed unless you really luck out or your opponent really gets a bad draw in the second half. Because, like, if you draw, like, if you're playing Council, and you draw two sorceresses or whatever, the healers, the clerics, you draw, like, two clerics and a bunch of potions, it's like, well, I can indefinitely survive one guy for a little while until I get more stuff. Whereas if you're playing Council and you just draw a bunch of archers and swords, it's like you are going to obliterate the other side unless they really know what they're doing.
Yep.
It is fun, though, because, I mean, I've been discovering some of the tactics between the two teams I have access to. The Council is very deceptive. The Council is actually very much a defensive ranged group, I've found. Their melee guy, the Knight, is supposed to go forward and block people or move people off things. The other melee guy, the Ninja, you don't want him chilling out in the front lines, is what I've discovered.
Yeah, he's a jump forward, jump back dude.
Yeah, you want to place Knights so your Ninja can go and swap places with them and swap back. Your major powerhouse is the Archer, and your follow-up powerhouse is the Sorcerer. So that's the thing that I think was my biggest learning curve, was figuring out that the Council are not your classic melee-oriented medieval group with all your ranged dudes being support. It's like your ranged dudes are your damage, and everyone is fragile except for the Knight, who can't actually hurt people very well. So the Council is I wouldn't say they suck, but they certainly are not a casual playstyle up front as they are presented, in my opinion. Also, I found out stuff like if there are thorns around your crystals can attack.
What?
Yeah. The thorny crystals have an attack range of 3 and can attack once per turn. Because they spray the thorns.
Well, that makes a whole new game for me then.
Yeah, when you're on that map. I'm playing Noise Maze on that map right now. Noise Maze, by the way, is goddamn savant at this game.
Oh, he's evil.
Like he didn't obliterate me. Like I put up a fight, but like you do not want to. Noise Maze is one of those players where you need to be thinking ahead, and you need to look at the grid and make sure that you are not setting yourself up for what his chosen group is able to do AOE wise, because he has friggin', especially the chain AOE that the Council Sorcerer has. Or is he a sorcerer? Or is he a wizard? Wizard. That AoE is devastating when you aren't prepared for it. Like, if you don't notice that you have guys chained diagonally, and then one of those wizards comes up and just starts pelting 3 dudes at once, you're like, whoa, 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 whoa! You know? And also, thanks to Seth, who, I think Seth was really the driving force getting a bunch of us into this, but Seth, every game I've played with Seth, he's picked a different army, which means that all of my games against Seth have been really, really hard, because I have no idea what his guys are able to do until I'm like 3/4 of the way through the game. Because I don't know what their drops are. I don't know what their special abilities are. So he's giving me a really good kind of crash course in what all the different armies can do. Like the troll orc dudes, whenever you hit most of them, they hit you back for like 50. And whenever you kill one of them, they get mad. I'm playing against him. I think he also showed me dwarves and dark elves. It's a fun. I'm finding it's kind of a fun game though. Like once you start trying to look at the metagame of it, there's things you can do. As long as you bear in mind that if you get poor draws, you know, you just got to really come up with sub goals, like figure out what Steam achievements you can get. Or I think a cool sub goal is if you have really poor draws, try to make a play for the crystals, because almost nobody goes for the crystals.
Yeah, I think I won my first one or two games based on destroying the crystals rather than against the enemies.
Yeah, and even then, like, that's risky, but, you know, the crystals seem to me to, like, crystals or stalling seem to be the only real things to do if you get a poor draw.
Mm-hmm.
The worst part is when you're like, no, it's going to get better, then you look and realize you're at zero for your upcoming resources. You're like, mm-hmm. Oh, it's not going to get better. I have three wizards and that's it. Okay. Anyway, yeah, Hero Academy. That's the other thing I got. It's fun. I'm still playing a lot of Secret World. I'm really enjoying Secret World. It's actually gone free to play as well. And that's kind of a fun game. It's buggy as hell at certain parts, but it's a cool engine. Anyway, that's all I got off topic. Aaron, any other thoughts on Hero Academy?
Just that if you do play the game, don't be ashamed of taking multiple runs at your turn before you get something that you like.
Oh, you have to do that. Yeah, you don't feel like you're playing it wrong by redoing your turn like 15 times. Like,
yeah, I know that I've had times where I've sat there and tried, plugged away four or five times and then found a wonderful move set that works and then gone with that. But then again, other times I'm just like, just turn, done, go. Have somebody else play.
Mm-hmm.
So don't, when you're playing that, don't be afraid to really just take your time and go for it. But that's basically it for Hero Academy.
Okay, what else have you got to talk about that's off topic?
I'll do my normal Lego burn first. Got the Power Robo set, which is the supposed Springer / Bulkhead knockoff.
That's the only way I know how to I was going to ask you if it was the Bulkhead one.
Yeah, it's the helicopter is very Springerish because it has like missile pod, like wing stub.
Okay, bits. I actually really want to get that, and I have no idea where to look for it. Like,
that's a good build. It's a recent release.
Where do I go to get that?
Should be Walmart's here before too long.
Okay, so it's something I can find in stores.
If not, it should be like Lego store. I don't know if there's any physical like Lego stores near you.
Actually, the only one in Canada is in this province. So it should be findable. I wasn't sure if I had to go online to look for it or something, or if it was.
No, I saw it in Toys R Us, but yeah, if Toys R Us, especially now, is definitely upcharging everything, which is really, really kind of sad. Normally they have about a 10% upcharge on Legos, and right now it runs up to 30% upcharge off of MSRP. So it's in the creator line, which means that it comes with multiple build instructions. It can be a truck or a helicopter or a robot, and the robot is very bulkheady. It was a fun little build. I did two of the builds live streaming. Didn't build the truck because it also will have a lot of the creator builds will have the build where you use 95% of the parts and the build where you'll use about 85% of the parts and the build that you use like half of the parts. And the truck looked to be the one that was the approximately half of the parts.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said to that. And so then built the helicopter and the robot, since those are the two things that everybody was like, oh, let me know if it's, you know, how much of a Transformers knockoff that knockoff is.
So it's not like, so it's like Creo in that it's two different builds, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Actually, there are four Lego stores in Canada.
Good Lord.
Calgary, Vancouver, Toronto, and Toronto. Fairview right. Mall and Sherway Gardens.
I've been to the Sherway one, I believe. A GM fan took me there on one of our mail dates.
In the West Mall?
I think so.
Okay. She could probably go to that store and get one.
That's tempting. I might do that. I don't know if I'm going to do that this month or next month.
Yeah, it is a smaller, likely less expensive build. So,
what does it run for?
In the U.S., I think it was like $18 is MSRP. Wow. Okay.
It's like $20. And I can build, I can, if I can, if it's $20 and there's all kinds of builds I can do with it, I could probably just make that my Lego toy.
Let me actually look up the thing now that I've said a number I'd like to be. I can, it did not seem like it. Yeah. $19.99 was the MSRP. And then the other one that I'm thinking about getting then is the Thunder Wings, which is a blue, white, and orange jet into car into robot.
These robot ones sound really cool.
But yeah, they're interesting little fun builds. Yeah, it's a knockoff in so much as it is a green robot thing that can be rebuilt as a couple other things. Also, I got a lunar limo that comes with the Brick Daddy, who is a space pimp.
Oh dear.
It's this super, it's actually a really big, super long, as I make hand motions, long, build once it's done, and, has little gold pieces. He has a hood ornament that is the same brick as his head, as the hood ornament on his giant space limo. And it even has a trunk big enough to put a Lego minifig body into. So like a whole minifig will fit in the back of it.
Wow.
So when the Brick Daddy is done with his space hose, he just throws them in the trunk and then takes off. trying to think what other... I got one other Lego thing that I built. It's just the Lego City dump truck. Looks kind of Wreck-Gar-ish. It's orange. And then the other thing from Lego, proving Lego's high-quality customer service is... So I had the... Winter Village cottage that I built, and it was missing a couple of pieces. And so I just, you know, sent the form, filled out, said, hey, it was missing stuff. And I got my replacement parts in very rapidly with the standard apology letter. And hey, you know, we have a whole division that's their, the whole point of their job is to keep this sort of thing from happening. So, we apologize, here's your stuff, and build and have fun, or something like that. So, it was priority shipped from Denmark, proving, like I said, proving again that that they mean serious business when it comes to their customer service.
Well, at least you're getting something with the premium of what their stuff costs.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, and it's a thing that I'll stand up and rally behind, is on the non-licensed products, they've maintained a price point since, like, the 90s of approximately 10 cents a brick for their normal products, which it can get higher, but it always amazes me when people say, oh, no, they've always jacked their prices, and no, I remember, you can go back and look at any of the wikis that have the old prices, and it's maintained since the 90s a similar price point, and not a whole lot of toys can say that.
Mm-hmm.
So stand up for my Lego. Other than that, I got the Cards Against Humanity holiday pack, which it's a 30 card booster to the game. Got from Noise Maze. He sent a, I guess, Christmas gift. He had bought a whole case of the Portal Turret blind packs, which are little, like, 3-inch tall, two and a half, 3-inch tall portals with different, or portal turrets with different paint schemes on them. And he had said out there, hey, you know, what are you guys interested in? And I said, I like the Bullseye one and maybe the Zebra one, fully intending to pay for it. And then it showed up after 2 days. Like, oh, cool, how much do I owe you? And he said, Merry Christmas. It's like, but how much do I... Merry... Okay. But they're little statues. One of them does not want to stand upright, which I think is a toy feature for those of you that have played Portal.
I was going to ask if they actually opened or anything, because I couldn't catch that from...
No, they're bonus. Either molded, open, or closed.
Okay. That's still cool. I mean, if they opened, I would basically be all over them. Not to say I think that little statues are not cool.
Yeah.
But if they opened, I would probably be going out of my way to find those.
Yeah. No, they are fixed. The zebra seems like his front legs are maybe a little bit too tight, but he tips over very easily. Let's see. Beyond that, I got one of my bottles of Black Blood of the Earth, of like the full size bottle, not the sampler.
And have you chugged it yet?
No, I have not chugged it. 750 milliliters gets up into caffeine toxicity levels, and whilst I believe that I have a high caffeine tolerance, I don't want to play Russian roulette via caffeine.
Why not?
Because I enjoy my life.
I guess if you're going to be a wuss about it, that would be the answer.
Sure.
Oh! Sorry, I hear your dog in the background.
Yeah.
He's like, he's not a wuss! Don't you say that about him!
My dad will beat you up.
I've seen him drink so much caffeine, you wouldn't believe it! Don't you say that! I can hear you! I'm a dog! I got dog hearing!
The thing is, he is just about barking in time with your yelling at him. It's okay, he settled down. No, I had had to mute my microphone when they went nuts earlier because apparently one of the neighbor kids decided at 9 o'clock at night to come and see if I wanted to buy candy bars from him.
You want candy bars?
Yeah, I didn't buy any candy bars.
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to not buy any candy bars, and I'm going to not feed you to my dog.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be one thing if the kid had, like, the school box of, hey, we're doing this as a fundraiser, but he had just a box of Snickers.
Was he all like, yo, you want to buy some Snickers?
It was pretty close to that. And I was just like, what? No, just quit. If I didn't respond, why are you still knocking?
Note to self, offer Aaron candy bars at 9 o'clock. All right.
Yeah.
I totally lost track of what we're talking about now.
Yeah, what we got this week, and I'm done.
All right. Omegas, take us out with your off-topic what we got.
It's going to be quick because I don't have anything off-topic.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening.
I warned you.
That's cool. That's fine. We're good.
Near Christmas, I'm scared to buy anything.
Yes, I've already gotten in trouble for buying something for myself, so...
I swear, anything that is coming on the way right now, I technically bought a while ago. That's my excuse.
That's your story and you're sticking to it?
Yep. I mean, like, well, I had something from AmiAmi, my Dreadwing. He's still not here. He's chilling out in customs now. Yeah. That Dreadwing is taking his sweet time getting over here.
My link's the same way.
Yeah. Also, this isn't what we got, but I'm going to say... After that, you know, the HLJ Black Friday sale with all the 500 yen things and whatnot?
Mm-hmm.
So I bought too much of that. And so I was like, well, if I'm shipping all this, I'm going to wait till Masterpiece Red Alert comes out. So Masterpiece Red Alert comes out, and I ship all that stuff just in time for the HLJ shipping sale.
No.
So 20% off EMS. That was a 3,000 yen EMS bill to ship, like, 8 toys over here. So that wasn't bad.
Not bad.
It was like, what did I, like... 3 SRCs, like Masterpiece Red Alert. They still had animated, like Japanese animated Cybertronian Ratchet for 500 yen. So I was like, why not? I like animated. So yeah, that's going to be fun. But that still hasn't actually shipped yet because I had something shipped during an HLJ shipping offer, which usually means it'll be a little while till that ships. But nonetheless, thank you all for listening. If you'd like to leave us a listener voicemail, our Google voicemail inbox number is 318-775-9830. That is 318-775-9830. That is 318-775-9830. Aaron and Omegas, thank you for joining me this evening on this Saturday recording. Did I mention that yet? Because it is a Saturday recording. It's new and exciting. The reasons being that I'm also going to keep talking because I think that my internet just died. This totally sounds like my internet just died. Oh, man. I'm going to check over here. I haven't been able to get on any websites with my desktop computer for the last, like, 10, 20 minutes. Oh, those sound like dead Skypes. Oh, yeah, they're disconnected. I've lost them. Anyway, yeah, we're recording on a Saturday because Aaron didn't want to record too late on a Thursday. And then Friday I was going to be recording something else, and then I wasn't feeling well and I pulled out. And then it turns out no one would have really felt like recording something fun last night. And then here we are, Saturday. And now Skype's dead. So it's kind of perfect. It's now, listeners, it's just you and me. This is you and me together. We're kind of just one, really. I've never really been this close to you before, dear listener. It's just you and I, and, you know, without the other guys around, I thought I'd say that it's been kind of fun chilling out this close to your head this whole time. I can't say I really mind. You know, I'm enjoying myself. I like the view, but maybe I've said too much. I should get out of here. So tune in next time, ladies and gentlemen, for some more WTF at TFW good times. And, I'm looking forward to the next time I get to spend this much alone time with you. Sleep well, listener. I'll talk to you later. Goodbye.
Hopefully it's one of those rambling outros where he doesn't even need us to be there.